following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a
time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
Sheriff Buford T. Justice, please.
Who that?
This is Bandit Darvill talking.
Where are you, you some?
Before I tell you where I am, Sheriff, there's just one thing I want to say.
Son, this is Bill Holwick, a.k.a. the Snowman, driving in my Trans Am to check out a sci-fi triple feature featuring War of the World, The Day the Earth Stood Still, and Forbidden Planet, plus some Power Records Godzilla coming right at you. Breaker 1-9 for the Bandit got you a Smokey Report. 10-10 and I'm clear. Later.
We're on our way to Boston to get some clam chowder.
Bye-bye. You suck.
I'm trying to do what they say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to go.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lieber Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, brings you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Dana Andrews and Pat Crowley in War of the Worlds. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Irving Cummings.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight we are going to take a look into the possible frightening future, as though the present weren't bad enough, and see what might happen if our Earth were invaded by another planet. It's George Pal's production for Paramount, War of the Worlds, and our stars are Dana Andrews and Pat Crowley. They will join me later for a preview of George Pal's latest production for Paramount, Conquest of Space. Meanwhile, here's our good friend, Ken Carpenter.
It would be hard to find a man who works as many hours a day as you women do. For instance, you spend 5.5 hours every week just doing dishes, and that's only for a family of four. But Lux Liquid Detergent gives you back some of that time. Lux Liquid is made especially to help you do dishes fast and easy. It floats grease right off. Plates, glasses, utensils, even pots and pans come clean really fast. Just a teaspoonful does a dishpan full. One can outlasts several boxes of the leading laundry powder. Your hands stay nice, too. Lux Liquid is almost as mild as Lux Toilet Soap. The next best thing to a dishwashing machine. That's Lux Liquid. Lieber Brothers unconditionally guarantees Lux Liquid is just as wonderful as we say. And the millions of women who've used it have found that Lux Liquid is as good for dishes as Lux Flakes Care is for nylons. Buy it when you market. Lux Liquid in the can with the dripless spout.
Now Act One of War of the Worlds, starring Dana Andrews as Clayton and Pat Crowley as Sylvia.
No one would have believed in the middle of the 20th century that human affairs were being watched keenly and closely by intelligences greater than man's. Yet across the Gulf of Space on the planet Mars, intellects vast and cool and unsympathetic regarded our Earth with envious eyes, slowly and surely drawing their plans against us. Mars is more than 140 million miles from the sun, and for centuries it has been in the last stages of exhaustion. The inhabitants of this dying planet looked across space with instruments and intelligences of which we have scarcely dreamed, searching for another world to which they could migrate. Their nearest world was giant Jupiter, where the atmospheric pressure is thousands of pounds to the square inch. They could not go there, nor to Saturn, nor to Pluto, planets encased in eternal ice. They could not go to Neptune or Uranus, twin worlds in eternal night, and surrounded by unbreathable atmospheres of methane gas and ammonia vapor. They could not go to Mercury. Its temperature is that of molten lead. Of all the worlds that the intelligences on Mars could see and study, only our own warm Earth was green with vegetation, bright with water, and possessed a cloudy atmosphere eloquent of fertility. It did not occur to mankind that a swift fate may be hanging over us, that it would come at the time of our nearest approach to the orbit of Mars, that it would begin in or over the mountains northeast of Los Angeles, California, on a pleasant summer evening.
Lodeo, this is Pine Summit Lookout. I got a smoke.
Okay, what's your reading?
Azimuth, 160 degrees, 30 minutes. Right where that meteorite just hit. Did you see it?
Not me, but a couple of the guys did. Must have been a pretty big fireball.
Big? I never seen anything like it. Hey, look, you better get a pump truck over there before the fire gets really going.
Will do.
Truck number three to D.O. Number three to D.O.
D.O. to number three. How you coming?
Still pumping water on the fire, but it's under control. Unless this meteorite heats things up again. Over.
You mean it's still red hot? Over.
Red hot is right. And as big as a barn. Over.
Who are you kidding? Over.
I said big as a barn. Mac, I think somebody ought to take a look at it. Might be something for those astronomers down at Palomar. Over.
Maybe there's some guys even closer. The station at Pine Summit reported there were a couple of fellas camping up there. Said they were scientists.
Yeah? What kind? You don't want any butterfly experts or lizard specialists. Over.
I got you. Stand by and I'll check Pine Summit.
No, no butterflies or lizards. Just brook trout, yes. I'm Chief Fry Cook.
Mm-mm. They sure smell good, don't they?
There's plenty if you'd like to join us.
I'd like to, but I got to get back to Lookout. what I really meant was, didn't you two tell me you were scientists from Pacific Tech?
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bilderbeck is one of the country's top biochemists.
And he wouldn't know about meteors.
That's your department, Clayton.
The district officer phoned us at the summit. Want us to have an expert look at that meteor. Landed about 10, 12 miles from here over by Linda Rose.
Well, I thought we could tell much about it tonight. Probably won't be cool enough to touch for hours yet. Maybe not till morning.
And in the morning, I'm due back at the lab.
Well, that's what I was just thinking. All right, I'll stay over. Perhaps in the morning, the district officer can fix me up with a lift to Linda Rose.
How about me?
You?
Sure. My relief's coming up first thing tomorrow morning. I'd kind of like to get a look at that meteor myself.
Good. That's a deal.
Professor?
Yes?
Those trout do smell awful good, don't they?
Change your mind?
Yeah. My wife always said my strongest point's my weakness. What do you know? Look at all them cars.
Yeah, sightseers already.
Yeah, one of them's the sheriff. That's his car parked on the fire break.
Aye. Fiddler, up here.
Well, that ranger waving at us?
Yeah, that's Smith. Come on. The meteor sure plowed the tops off those trees, didn't it?
That's odd. They don't usually hit at such an oblique angle.
Hey, Smith, where is it?
Down here in the gully.
That's it down there, half buried under all that loose earth.
Still smoking.
You bet it is. You could fry eggs on it.
Ooh, really is big as a house, isn't it?
Hey, I wouldn't get too near that thing. It'll scorch you.
Oh, thanks. I'll bear that in mind.
Did you see it come down?
Did I see it?
Yes. My uncle and I were coming out of the movies last night just when it flashed across the sky. We heard the explosion when it hit here.
That's what I don't understand. Why a meteorite that size didn't make a bigger crater?
Well, the ranger told us a scientist is coming over from Pacific Tech. He'll be able to tell you. He knows all about meteors.
Well, he does. Really?
He's top man in astro and nuclear physics. Clayton Forrester. Well, you must have heard of him.
It appears that you have.
Well, I did a thesis on American scientists when I was working for my master's degree. Forrester was the man behind the new atomic engines. One of these days, he'll win the Nobel.
He isn't that good.
He certainly is. I think that if you knew him...
I do know him. That is, slightly.
Oh? What's he like? I mean, as a man.
Well, for one thing, when he goes hunting or fishing, he never shaves. After 4 or 5 days, he looks about as fuzzy as I do.
Oh, you're Dr. Forrester?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, I'm Sylvia Van Buren.
How do you do?
Very well, now that I've met thee, Dr. Clayton Forrester. Come on, I want my uncle to meet you.
Oh, but I...
Please, he's just over there talking to the sheriff.
All right, you in.
Well, they won't be able to haul this one off to a museum.
They certainly won't.
Uncle Matthew?
Yes, my dear?
I want you to meet Dr. Clayton Forrester, the astrophysicist. Dr. Forrester, my uncle, Dr. Collins, pastor of the community church.
Oh, I'm so glad to know you, Dr. Forrester.
How do you do, sir?
Hey, Sheriff.
Hmm?
Look here.
Yeah, what's wrong?
Borrowed this Geiger counter off a guy that just came out here looking for uranium. Listen to it.
Mind if I try that a moment, Ranger?
Oh, no. Here you are.
Now, let's point the pole meter toward the gully.
See what I mean?
It's the meteor, all right.
It's radioactive?
Apparently. But why? It's beyond me.
You mean there's no record of anything like this happening before?
Well, I've never heard of it. Now, maybe I'll stick around until that thing cools off. Dr. Collins?
Yes?
Where's a good place in town where I could shave and clean up a little bit?
Well, the best place is my house, Dr. Forrester. Sylvia and I would be delighted if you'd stay with us.
Well, I wouldn't
want... Of course you will.
But it may be until tomorrow.
It's settled, Dr. Forrester. And if you're wondering how on earth you can put in your time in a place like Linda Rosa, there's a square dance tonight.
All right. I surrender. Sheriff.
Yes?
If that meteor is radioactive, you'd better keep people away from it. There might be very dangerous radiations.
Oh, that's so, yeah. Okay, I'll post a couple of deputies. Is there anything else?
No, but if you need me, you know where to find me.
Yeah, sure. I'll be there myself at the square dance.
Having fun, Dr. Forrester?
Sure. You know, dancing is something I don't get much time for.
Well, you should make time. Don't your girlfriends like to dance?
I don't have much time for them either, I'm afraid.
Oh, Dr. Forrester.
Oh, evening, Sheriff.
I was just talking by radio phone to one of my deputies out at the media. He says it's pretty well cooled off.
Good. Anyway, I'll look at it again in the morning.
All right. I'll call my deputies back and tell them to come on in. No tourists out there this time of night. And Saturday night is Saturday night, you know.
Hey, Salvador.
Yes? What did he say?
Sheriff says to come on in.
Oh, good.
Maybe we go have a beer, huh, Alonso?
Just a minute. Alonso? Yeah, it's coming from that meteor.
It's moving! Something is moving on top of it. It's turning.
It's no meteor.
Alonso,
hit the dirt.
Hey, he's coming right up through that opening in the top. Like a snake.
Yeah, or a periscope, like a cobra's head, only it's metal, some kind of green metal with eyes.
He's turning all around. What's he looking for?
Maybe us.
Maybe.
Look, Salvador, this could be some sort of enemy sneak attack. We gotta radio the sheriff.
Yeah, but we don't let him see us, huh?
No, we crawl along this ditch till we get near the patrol car, then make a run for it, right?
Maybe. Let's go.
Run! We gotta run!
Faster!
He's looking right at us! He's gonna kill us!
Hey, the lights! Who turned off those lights?
Now wait, don't get panicky, folks.
Sylvia! Dr. Forrester.
Yes, Uncle Mac.
Over here, Dr. Collins.
Good. Nothing to be alarmed about. You know, at midnight, they always play Goodnight Ladies and turn out the lights. I think they're just ahead of time.
Well, let's check our watches. I'll strike a match.
Let's see. I have 11:20. No, my watch has stopped.
Well, that's strange. So is mine. Dr. Forrester?
Yeah, mine too. Well, there's only one explanation. All our watches must have been magnetized.
But how?
Here we are, folks. Here's candles for everybody. Light them up.
Oh, Sheriff.
Yeah?
Do you happen to have a pocket compass?
Pocket compass? For sure.
May I see it, please?
Yeah, right here. All right, now what?
Well, just look at it.
I'll be hanged, but that needle isn't pointing north.
No, it isn't. It's pointing almost due west. Right to where that meteor came down.
Sheriff? Hey, where's the sheriff?
Yes, what is it, Fiddler?
Oh, hey, come take a look outside. There's a big fire out in the hills.
Is it west of town?
Yeah, due west. The reddest looking blaze I ever saw.
Sheriff, I hope your car is outside.
It sure is. Come on.
There's the reason the lights went out. Power line's down.
Yeah. It's funny. Alonso and Salvador were going to go back into town, but there's their car right over there.
And they must still be around.
Yeah. Alonso! Salvador!
Now, Sheriff, turn your flashlight over there, along that ditch.
Where?
Right over there. Those two white mounds in the ditch. Are those ashes or...
Lord. Nothing left but the outlines. Listen. Listen, what in the blazes?
Now, quick!
Did you see it?
Yes. It's... fantastic.
Oh, look, we've got to get word back to town. There's a transmitter in my car.
You had a car, Sheriff.
But Forrester, what is it? What kind of a gizmo is that thing?
Oh. Until a minute ago, I'd have sooner believed in fairies, witches, and ghosts. But now I think that gizmo is a machine from another planet.
Forrester, look! Coming over those mountains there.
Mm-hmm.
A second meteor. Just like the first. Sheriff, we've got to get word to the military right away.
Yeah, sure. But they'll never believe us. What will we tell them?
Tell them the truth. That we're under invasion from outer space.
We'll have Act Two of War of the Worlds in a moment. After a visit with Francis Scully. Well, Francis, my spy is telling me that you were out at 20th Century Fox over the weekend.
And it was a worthwhile trip, too, Ken. I went to preview their coming deluxe color CinemaScope picture about auto racing in Europe.
Oh, yes, that would be the racers. Say, I hear Kirk Douglas is great at it.
Oh, he's in good company, too. Bella Darvey, Gilbert Rowland, Cesar Romero, Lee J. Cobb, and Katie Jurado are also stars.
Well, those European races are famous for their excitement and danger.
And Henry Hathaway, who directed the racers, made sure movie fans would see the real thing. He used up over 90,000 feet of film shooting actual races.
Well, they must have gotten some spectacular shots.
Some fabulous shots, Ken. But the picture isn't all racing. The love and kisses department is well taken care of by Kirk Douglas and Bella Darvey. Well taken care of.
Well, with Bella Darvey and Katie Jurado in the racers, there'll be at least two luxe complexions on display.
Well, that's what you like, isn't it? Well, I guess most everybody does, though. There's nothing like a real luxe complexion.
And how true those words are, ladies. There's nothing like a real luxe complexion in Hollywood or anywhere. And it's true that 9 out of 10 movie stars like Bella Darvey and Katie Jurado count on Luxe toilet soap to help keep their complexions looking like a star's complexion should. But Luxe can be your soap, too. You don't have to be a movie star to have a movie star complexion. That's the beauty of Luxe. It can give you skin that would be called beautiful anywhere, even in Hollywood, the beauty capital of the world. So use mild and gentle Luxe. It's unconditionally guaranteed by Lever Brothers. Believe me, once you use it, you'll say there's no other soap quite like Luxe. Now our producer, Mr. Cummings.
Act Two of War of the Worlds, starring Dana Andrews as Clayton and Pat Crowley as Sylvia.
Get those half-tracks out of the way. Captain, I want the artillery replacements.
All right, I'm the devil. I'm the devil there.
Hey, here come the tanks.
I stand to carry a gun under the control of the United States Marines from El Toro Base. Colonel Ralph Hefner commanding. The gully where the machine landed is almost surrounded, and... Oh, there's the man we want to hear from. Dr. Forrester.
Yes?
Would you give us your opinion, sir? Are these meteor machines from Mars?
Well, certainly from some planet other than our own.
Directly into the microphone, please, Doctor.
Well, if they are Martians, I'm sure they... creatures that operate these machines must be quite uncomfortable in our heavier air and with the Earth's much stronger gravitational pull.
What do you think they look like, sir?
That's anybody's guess. We do know from animal evolution on this planet that it's possible they may have more than one brain, perhaps two or even more. And possibly they may even smell colors.
Smell color?
Well, that's speculation, of course.
Hey, Forrester.
Yes?
Colonel wants you in the command post.
Oh, coming.
If you'll excuse me, please.
Certainly, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Dr. Clayton Forrester, head of astrophysics at Pacific Tech.
The forward observation post is on this hill. The recoilless 75s are back here, Carbon Canyon.
Colonel Hefner.
In a moment, Forrester. Command, Hefner. Yes, that's right, Captain. Two rocket batteries on Hill 17 right now. Forrester?
Yes?
I want you to meet General Mann. He's in charge of intelligence for the Pacific area. General, Dr. Clayton Forrester.
I've heard quite a bit about you, Forrester. Glad you're with us.
I hope I can be of some help, General.
You can. First, let me brief you on the latest reports. Two machines have landed near Fresno, another outside Sacramento. Two down on Long Island. They're outside London. They're in Naples. One in Santiago, Chile.
Oh. Seem to be coming down at random.
It's too soon to know. But apparently that machine out there in the gully was the first down.
The lead ship, maybe.
Very likely. And the second one is exactly 2 miles due north. As I understand it, Forrester, you actually saw the first ship send out that destructive ray.
Yes, I did. That was an intense heat and light.
Two-thirds, sir.
Almost as powerful as the sun.
Atomic power?
Yes,
I'd say so, of some sort.
General.
Yes, Colonel.
That was a relay from the Pentagon. Santiago, Chile radios it's under attack. Two-thirds of the city already destroyed.
Two-thirds?
Yes, sir. But nothing like that can happen here, sir. We're ready for them.
Listen. Is that it?
Yes. Let's get to the observation post now.
Lights out! Cut all lights!
Lights off! Lights off!
Lights! Lights!
Keep your head down, General. Now focus your field glasses between these sandbags.
Yes.
You see the gully?
There's a greenish light glowing over it. Wait. Something's rising.
Like a periscope?
Yes. And beneath that, a greenish machine, almost round. Just floating there in the air, without propellers or jets.
It must be supported by some sort of rays. Probably a kind of magnetic flux. Huh. They must be keeping the opposing poles in balance, and that lifts the machine.
There's a second machine. And a third.
Dr. Forrester! Dr. Forrester!
Miss Van Buren, what are you doing?
Uncle Matthew insisted on coming, and I wouldn't let him by himself. Dr. Forrester, you've got to talk to him.
Miss Van Buren...
Please! You've got to stop him. He wants to go out and talk to those meteor machines.
What? All right, take me to him.
Uncle Matthew keeps saying we should try to make the Martians understand we're willing to be friends.
If they give us a chance to be.
I know.
Oh, come
on. But Uncle Matthew
close.
Says it's his duty as a
fire.
Minister, a man of God.
Oh, where is he now?
I left him right about... About here. Uncle Matt! Uncle Matt!
Forrester, the machines are advancing. There's some fool out there walking to meet them.
Oh, no.
Uncle Matt! Uncle Matt!
It's too late now. You can't save him.
No, no, no!
Artillery batteries, fail! Target batteries, fail!
Forrester, they're still there. They're untouched.
Yes. They've put up some sort of electromagnetic covering. A transparent dome that stops the shells.
They're coming at us!
All batteries, repeat fire!
It's impossible. One moment I got heavy artillery, tanks, and rockets, whole batteries of 105s, and then that ray hits them, and there's nothing. Nothing. Just a puff of ashes.
Well, now we know why two-thirds of Santiago was destroyed. Why? But not how?
I think I know, General. That heat ray neutralizes the mesons. Mesons are the atomic glue which holds all matter together. They're cut across their lines of magnetic force... And any object will simply cease to exist.
Uh-huh. And just how do we defend ourselves against it?
Not with shells and high explosives, I can tell you that. Take my word for it, General. You'd better talk to Washington about uranium and hydrogen bombs.
Here they come. Here they come!
Come on, let's get out of here.
Everybody out! All commands pull back north of Highway 60, Tunnel Bunker! Come on, hurry it up! Everybody out!
Miss Van Buren. Sylvia.
Hmm?
Wake up. Let's not spend all morning in a cellar pit.
Oh. How long have we been here?
Well, since the Jeep ran out of gas, I guess about 3 hours. As near as I can figure it, we're somewhere southwest of Corona.
And that machine?
It's gone. It headed in the other direction.
Oh, thank heavens. You know, I'm hungry.
Well, you ought to be. Come on. On your feet now. There's a farmhouse across that field. Looked like the people took off in a big hurry. But maybe they left some food.
Look over the mountains.
A good old Air Force.
They found one of the machines. disappeared. In midair.
Yeah. Well, it isn't going to do any good thinking about it. Let's hit for that farmhouse. There are times when there's nothing so beautiful, so soul-satisfying as bacon and eggs.
And the people who lived here were so thoughtful to leave us some. Where's your plate?
Right here. You know, I get most of my meals in coffee shops. It's pretty tame eating.
Well, don't you live at home?
No, I live on the campus. You see, I haven't any family.
Oh, I come from a big one. There's 9 of us, all in Minnesota except me. Well, Dr. Forrester?
Hmm?
Aren't you going to sit down? There is a kitchen table.
Oh, yeah. Well, a big family must be fun. I imagine it makes you feel, well, as if you belong to something.
It does. Maybe that's why I feel kind of lost right now.
Yeah, I know. But everything's going to be all right, Sylvia.
Is it?
Well, at least we've got to think that.
They, whatever they are, they murder everything they see. Everything that moves. We're helpless.
Sylvia, every creature that has ever lived has had some sort of weakness. Not one of them has ever been invincible. And somehow, we'll find the weakness of these Martians. Some way to stop them.
I hope so. I'll get the coffee. You know, I feel like I did one time when I was a little girl. I'd wandered off. I'd forgotten why. But I became awfully scared and lonely. Finally, I went to a church. I was afraid to go anyplace else. I stayed right by that door, praying for the one who loved me best to come by and find me. It was Uncle Matthew who found me.
I'm awfully sorry about him.
Oh, I loved him very much. Oh, I could bowl my head off.
But you're not going to. You're not the kind.
What kind am I?
The brave kind.
Clayton!
Get down, on the floor.
Sylvia? Sylvia?
Yes, Clayton?
Are you all right?
Yes. It sounds right outside the kitchen.
It is. Sylvia, I've got to get a look at them.
Oh, no. No.
Shh. Don't you see? This is the first chance any human has had to get a real close-up of them. If I can tell General Mann and our scientists what kind of beings we're dealing with...
All right. But I'm coming with you.
Okay.
Wait. Take this.
What good is a carving knife?
Maybe none, but take it.
In the front room. Come on. See it. Don't move.
The knife.
Don't move.
What did it look like?
I'd rather not say.
Your hands. What's that on your hands?
Blood. Martian blood. Sylvia. Sylvia, stop it. Stop it.
Clayton!
Come on, run for it.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, for the benefit of those of you who don't know me, I'm General Mann of G2. I've asked you here because we desperately need the knowledge and skill of each one of you. Physicists, scientists, representatives of the 6th Army Command, the Marine Corps, Navy, Air Force, the heads of our law enforcement agencies, the Civil Defense and Red Cross units. The Secretary of Defense in Washington has instructed me to give the whole picture of what has happened and what lies before us.
That is true. I'd like to see General Mann.
Please, let us through.
What's all that commotion? Major, see what that is.
Yes, sir. General Mann. General.
Yes, Dr. Bilderbeck.
That man is one of my colleagues, Dr. Clayton Forrester.
Forrester? We thought he'd been killed.
Let them through. Let them through.
Forrester, Miss Van Buren, we gave you up 24 hours ago.
You almost had reason to, General.
Yes, the Martians tried to take us alive.
What?
Yeah, this morning, just outside of Corona. We managed to get away. We found an abandoned truck and drove to Pacific Tech. They told us you were here. Oh, by any chance, is Dr. Lucille Dupre in this room?
Right here, Forrester.
Oh, good. Dr. Dupre, I want you to analyze the stain on this cloth. I suggest that you leave for the laboratory right away.
What kind of stain is it, Forrester?
The blood of a Martian.
Martian? Forrester, I want a complete report of your experience. But first, I think you ought to hear what I was about to say.
By all means, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the latest radio message from the Department of Defense to General Mann, Command Post Xenophon, Los Angeles. Scandinavia presumed now in enemy control. All communications from Sweden, Norway, and Denmark blacked out. Paris now under attack. French cabinet is transferred to Strasbourg. Madrid totally destroyed. Rome, no further word, blacked out. London, blacked out. Buenos Aires, blacked out. Philadelphia, blacked out. New Orleans, blacked out.
General Mann?
Yes.
I've heard enough to convince me, enough, I'm sure, to convince every physicist in this room. We must answer the enemy with our final weapon.
I was just coming to that, Forrester. By order of the Secretary of Defense and authorized by the President of the United States, the city of Los Angeles is to be defended by full atomic force. 3 hours from now, this afternoon at 1600 hours, the flying wing will drop the newest and most deadly bomb ever built, a thermonuclear bomb of octuple power. In 3 hours, we shall know its effectiveness and possibly the fate of mankind.
In a moment, Act Three of War of the Worlds. Ladies, when it comes to wash day, the big talk is all about Rinso Blue, the remarkable new detergent that washes whiter because it blues as it washes. And now there's even a song about it. Listen.
Hi, this is Les Paul.
And Mary Ford.
This is the song of Rinso Blue. Complete detergent, completely new. It gets clothes extra white and clean, cause it blues your washing machine.
Yes, Rinso Blue gets clothes extra white because it blues as it washes. So get Rinso Blue today.
And just remember, ladies, if your present detergent doesn't blue as it washes, it's only doing half the job. So switch to new Rinso Blue. It does a grand job on dishes and glasses, too. And yet, it's so mild on your hands. Today, get new Rinso Blue. It washes whiter because it blues as it washes. And that's unconditionally guaranteed by Lever Brothers. We pause now for station identification.
Curtain rises on Act Three of War of the Worlds, starring Dana Andrews as Clayton and Pat Crowley as Sylvia.
This report is being recorded on tape for future history. If there is to be any future history, the future of our civilization may well depend upon what happens here this afternoon.
Attention, please, attention.
3 minutes to bomb time.
In case you didn't hear that, it is now 3 minutes to bomb time.
Attention, Dr. Forrester. Please report to General Mann.
The target for the bomb is a nest of Martian machines in the Puente Hills. We are approximately 6 miles from the target. There is, however, a forward observation post which has the Martians clearly in sight and which will report back to this base by telephone.
You know, of course, that you're not supposed to be here.
Everyone else has told me that from General Mann down. But I'm only interested in where Clayton Forrester wants me.
Now that is here.
Attention, please. 2 minutes to bomb time. 2 minutes.
Forrester. Forrester.
Dupre. I thought you were back at the lab.
I just finished. That sample of Martian blood, Forrester. It's astounding. I've never seen blood crystals so anemic.
Huh. Anything else?
Yes. The structure of the corpuscles is...
Attention! The bomber is now approaching the target area. Prepare to take shelter.
Forrester, General Mann wants us in his dugout.
We're coming.
We're coming.
Watch your heads, everybody. There's not much clearance here.
Attention. 1 minute. 1 minute. If you have no goggles, turn your backs to the blast. Remember, the heat flash and concussion that follow are dangerous. Are dangerous.
Well, General Mann.
Forrester, I want you to stand by for the first damage reports.
Certainly, sir.
Major, open the line of the forward observation post.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, sir.
Observation.
Yes, sir.
The flying wing is now beginning its bomb run.
Yes, sir. General, those Martian machines are throwing up some sort of a transparent dome over themselves.
Uh-huh. That would be an electromagnetic shield.
30 seconds. 30 seconds.
Clayton?
Yes?
May I hold your hand?
Of course.
20 seconds. Stand by. Ten seconds. Nine. Eight. Seven. Six. Five, four, three, two, one, zero. Attention! Prepare for heat wave and high velocity winds.
Observation. Can you see anything?
Not yet, sir. An awful lot of smoke. See something moving. They're still there. They haven't even been touched. They're still...
Observation. Come in. Observation, come in. Well, now we know the worst.
We may not be through yet, General.
Sure.
No, there's still a chance. A forlorn hope, maybe, that our sciences can search out some weakness in these Martians.
Yes, perhaps biologically. That anemic blood.
Look, our battle now is for time. We've got to take our instruments and hide somewhere in the Rocky Mountains. Set up an emergency laboratory there.
Well, I'm sure the Air Force stands ready to fly your equipment wherever you wish.
That's good enough for us. Bilderbeck, Dupre, you too, Sylvia. As soon as we get back to Los Angeles, we'll gather up all the things we need.
And... They're coming! They're coming!
Everybody out of here! Everybody out!
Attention, please. Attention. This is an official order of the 6th Army Command. Evacuate your homes at once. Take food and water and extra clothing with you. Do not panic. All major highways have been marked to lead you to evacuation centers in the hills and along the beaches.
Here in the truck for me.
Forrester, bring only the sonic microscopes.
Okay. Oh, which floor are they on?
The 10th. The 10th, Forrester.
Hurry, Clayton.
Don't worry. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Those men, they're losing.
Boys, there's a truck. That's what we need.
Stop the engine. Stop the engine.
But Clayton!
We'll come back for him. Start him.
Huh. I told him to wait here. Couldn't have been more than 5 minutes. Sylvia! Build him up! Dupre! Sylvia! Sylvia! Build him up!
They went off and left you too, eh?
No. Something must have happened. They'll be back. Well, they were in a yellow truck that was...
A truck? Sir... I'll give you $1,000.
Huh? For what?
Your place in that truck.
Listen, I said there'd be...
$2,000.
Look, I don't want anything from you.
$5,000. I'm rich. I've got it right here. My wife, servants, everybody. They all ran off and left me. But you can have any amount you...
No, I'm sorry. Money's no good now.
$10,000, sir. $10,000.
Sylvia!
You pray! $50,000!
Build it back!
Sylvia! $100,000! Everything I've got! Everything!
Where can they be?
Sylvia!
Oh, ma'am, I'm looking for a girl. Tall, dark girl. She was driving a yellow truck and... Well, I'm sorry, ma'am, but she's lost. She's probably very frightened. Lost. She said the last time she was lost, when she was so frightened. Yeah, maybe that's where she went. A church.
Thank you.
Sylvia!
Fiat voluntas tua, sicut in caelo et in...
Sylvia!
Panem nostrum quotidiano da nobis hodie...
Sylvia?
Under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say,
Sylvia,
Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress.
Sylvia!
Clayton!
In
here,
him will
here.
I trust. Surely he shall deliver
Let
thee
me through.
From the snare of the fowler.
Let me through, please.
My dearest. Oh, my dearest.
Oh, darling.
The mob. They took the truck, pushed us out in the street blocks from where you left us. I ran back, but you were gone.
It's all right now, Sylvia. It's all right.
Yes. We're together.
A thousand shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand. But it shall not come nigh thee. Only with thine eyes shalt thou behold and see the reward of it. Because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, even
Clayton.
The Most High thy habitation.
Yeah.
There shall no evil befall thee.
Something's happening to thy machines.
Neither shall any plague come nigh thy dwelling.
Come on.
For he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways.
Look. There in the street, that body.
Yeah. That's one of them.
They're dying. They're dying everywhere.
We prayed for a miracle, and it's happened.
All over the world, in London, in Paris, in Rome, Rio de Janeiro, Melbourne, New York, and San Francisco, the terrible invasion began to collapse. The Martians had no resistance to the bacteria in our atmosphere, to which we have long since become immune. Once they had breathed our air, germs which no longer affect us began to kill them. The end came swiftly. After all that men could do had failed, the Martians were destroyed and mankind saved by the littlest thing which God, in his wisdom, had put upon this earth.
In a moment, our stars will return.
Pepsodent! White, white, whiter teeth, Pepsodent for me. Whiter teeth are guaranteed, brush them and you'll see.
Right. No other leading toothpaste, not one, gets teeth as clean, as white as Pepsodent. You see, Pepsodent contains the most effective tooth cleaning ingredient in the world, IMP, insoluble metaphosphate.
Wow!
That's what it's called. IMP is found only in the Pepsodent Irium formula because Pepsodent uses the entire world supply.
White, whiter teeth, Pepsodent for me.
And oh yes, Cleaner, whiter teeth naturally mean less chance of decay, and a sweeter breath with a clean mouth taste for hours.
Whiter teeth are guaranteed. Brush them and you'll see.
Lever Brothers makes this promise, this unconditional money-back guarantee. Change to Pepsodent and you'll see your teeth become whiter.
Brush them and you'll see.
Now, here's Mr. Cummings with our stars.
And here they are, Dana Andrews and Pat Crowley. Dana, how do you feel about planetary invasion?
Well, Irving, if I have a choice, I'd rather we invaded them.
Then you'll want to see George Pal's new Technicolor picture for Paramount, Conquest of Space. Because whereas War of the Worlds is just science fiction, Conquest of Space is science fact. The entire action takes place on the planet Mars and the Wheel, a man-made station some 1,100 miles above the Earth.
Mars? It's a long way to Mars, even with a space station in between.
Yes, Pat, the men who lead a fantastic existence on the Wheel are building a spaceship for flight to the moon, but later they receive orders to proceed directly to Mars.
And they make it, of course.
Yes, but it's a dangerous mission. And there's an exciting and suspenseful climax. And I think it's interesting that all the players are young unknowns who are getting their very first chance.
And I hope they'll all be as big a hit as Pat. I understand there's a good chance your name may appear in the Academy Award nominations this week, Pat, for the Best Supporting Actress in your first big role in Forever Female.
Oh, well, now that'd be too good to be true. But I'm sure Paramount's The Country Girl will be nominated. But I just don't see how anyone could choose between the performances of Bing Crosby and William Holden. And, of course, Grace Kelly's a cinch.
Well, there's no doubt at all about you and Grace Kelly being Lux girls, is there?
Oh, no, Irving. If getting an Oscar were as easy as having a Lux complexion, I'd be a cinch, too. I'll always use Lux for my complexion. It's just wonderful.
And now, how about next week's play, Irving?
Well, next week, it's an entirely different type of adventure, Dana. One of our 20 greats. A story of a search for gold by a trio of fascinating characters. And it's filled with suspense right up to the unexpected climax. It's Warner Brothers, The Treasure of Sierra Madre. And as our stars will be Edmund O'Brien and Walter Brennan.
Oh, I'll have to listen to that, Irving. Good night.
Good night.
You are both great.
You know, you women certainly have a right to complain about all the time you have to spend doing dishes. Well, it takes about 5.5 hours a week just to do the dishes for a family of four. And considering that doing dishes is only one of the chores you have to do every day...
Well, it certainly proves the truth of the saying, women's work is never done.
But at least it's done easier with Lux Liquid Detergent. Yes, with Lux Liquid, you can get those dishes out of the way really fast and easy. Made especially for dishwashing, Lux Liquid floats grease off, gets plates and glasses sparkling clean.
And you can skip the drying, too. Just rinse and let them drain dry.
Just a teaspoonful does a dishpan full. One can outlasts several boxes of the leading laundry powder.
And when you use Lux Liquid, your hands stay nice.
Yes, ma'am. Lux Liquid's almost as mild as Lux Toilet Soap.
Ken, tell them about the way it's packed.
Well, Lux Liquid is packed right in a can that won't break with a dripless spout that prevents spilling over the sides.
Know how much I like Lux Liquid, ladies? I like it as much for dishes as I like Lux Flakes for nylons.
Lux Liquid, like all Lever Brothers products, is unconditionally guaranteed. Your money back if you don't agree it's every bit as good as we say it is. Buy a can of Lux Liquid next time you mark it. It's the next best thing to a dishwashing machine.
Lever Brothers Company, makers of Lux Toilet Soap and Lux Liquid Detergent, invite you to be with us again next Tuesday evening when the Lux Radio Theater presents The Treasure of Sierra Madre, starring Edmund O'Brien and Walter Brennan. This is Irving Cummings saying good night to you from Hollywood.
Ladies and gentlemen, Radio Free Europe is our way of telling people in the enslaved countries about American life and its freedom. Radio Free Europe is a citizen-sponsored organization and it urgently needs your support. You can play a personal role in the Crusade for Freedom by mailing your contribution to Crusade for Freedom in care of your local postmaster. Dana Andrews may soon be seen in the Universal International Technicolor production, Smoke Signal. Heard in our cast tonight were Les Tremaine as General Mann, Herb Butterfield as Dr. Bilderbeck, Bill Boucher as the Sheriff, Paul Freese as the narrator, Harley Bear as Fiddler, Ken Peters as the reporter, and Howard McNear, William Conrad, George Neese, Robert Bailey, Herb Ellis, Irene Tedrow, Don Diamond, Jack Crucian, Frank Gersel, George Baxter, Judah Mason, and Eddie Marr. Our radio play was adapted by Leonard St. Clair, and our music was composed and directed by Rudy Schrager. More and more Lux laundries are opening across the country. These carefully selected professional laundries use the same Lux flakes you use at home. Gentle Lux flakes plus professional methods means the cleanest clothes ever. And since Lux flakes are so much easier on all fabrics, your clothes will last longer as well as look better. Let a Lux laundry be your family laundry. Look for that Lux sign. And join us next Tuesday night to hear Treasure of the Sierra Madre with Edmund O'Brien and Walter Brennan.
Our story, Godzilla versus the Alien Invasion, begins innocently enough on a timber barge in the northern part of Lake Michigan.
Now that we're out of the locks at Lake Huron, Captain, we should have smooth sailing.
There's still a ways to go, Will. Lake Michigan's a mighty big body of water. I remember.
What's wrong, Captain?
Look out there, Will. What? In the middle of the lake, water's bubbling like crazy. You see that, Will?
Whoa, what is it? Some kind of giant lizard?
I don't believe my eyes. All engines stop! All engines stop!
What do you think it is, Captain?
Some kind of huge lizard. I don't know. It's heading southwest, toward the Wisconsin shore. Must be 400 feet tall. Easy.
Well, shouldn't we radio the mainland about this creature, Captain?
Right. It's no use, Will. This radio's dead. Gone.
Here, look here, Captain. All the tubes burned out like cinder.
Oh, there's only one explanation. Radioactivity. That creature's radioactive, and we got no way to warn the mainland until we get there ourselves.
Well, that'll take at least the whole day.
There's no telling what damage that creature can do by then.
Obviously, these sailors don't know that Godzilla is friendly to mankind. But at this very moment, a far more sinister force is at work. An alien spacecraft hovers ominously over Lake Michigan's western shore, 100 miles north of Chicago.
Our explorers say the Earthlings call this water body a lake. Lake Michigan. A typically strange Earth name.
Yes, Commander Pluton.
Guide our craft to the edge of the water, as we've done before. Their sun is beyond the horizon.
It is dark, Commander. Even their one small moon is in quarter phase.
Very well. Land near the wooded shoreline, so we can work quickly.
We have landed, Commander Pluton. I've opened the pressure door and lowered the exit ramp.
We must work quickly, Talem. Is Lona ready with the pods?
He is ready, Commander.
Good. Lona, you and Talem will plant our birth pods in the shallows of this earth lake, as we've done before. Quickly! Quickly! Out into the shallows. Here.
This earth lake is cold, Commander Pluton.
That is why we're here. The atmosphere in our world grows increasingly warm. This earth temperature is better suited to the hatching of our birth pods.
Here. Lona, I feel the other pods beneath me in the water. We will place this pod here.
Back to the ship for the rest, quickly, before we are spied. The Earthlings must know nothing of our plan until we are ready to make them our slaves.
It won't be long now, Linda.
Where are we going exactly, Bill?
A small town called Port Washington. We just left Milwaukee, so we've got 25 miles to go.
Dr. Scott says he's sighted UFOs along the Wisconsin side of Lake Michigan 3 times over the past year.
He said Port Washington was a good place to look for UFOs. We can drive right up to the shore and camp out.
Do you think we'll spot any UFOs?
I hope so. We're not driving all the way up here from Chicago for nothing.
Is that the last of the birth pods, Dale?
Yes, Commander.
We must go. We spent too much time here already.
But we have left three times as many pods here this time.
True. But we must be gone before the Earth's sun rises.
Lonar has already started the engines on our ship.
Come, Dale. Soon we will return to this Earth. Not in darkness like thieves, but as conquerors from the world of constant sun.
Not long after Bruton and his alien soldiers leave Lake Michigan's western shore, Billy and Linda arrive at that very spot and...
Oh, Billy, what a lovely sunrise coming up over the lake.
It is beautiful, Linda, but...
But what?
Look at the morning star in the western sky.
I've never seen a star so bright.
Neither have I. In fact, I don't think it's a star at all.
What do you mean?
Just keep your eye on it for a minute.
Why, it's moving, Billy.
Yes, and quite fast, too.
A UFO!
We'll need a closer look than this to get convincing photographs, though.
That was the news, boys, with their new hit single, Front Page Story. Hey, kids, how about this Wisconsin spring we're having? Says in the weather sheet it's the warmest spring here in over 50 years. Getting warmer by the minute. Now we've got the number 5 single in your swinging Godfather's hit list.
Ugh, that guy drives me crazy.
Hey, Linda, look out there in the lake. The water's doing something weird, man.
It looks like it's boiling or something.
Something's coming out of the water. Do you see what I see?
What are they, Billy?
Some kind of... I don't know what.
They're almost 200 feet tall.
We're gonna get out of here.
Those creatures are coming this way.
I'm trying, Linda. I'm trying.
Billy, in the middle of the lake, there's something else.
I can't believe this. If that's not a prehistoric lizard, I don't know what.
Try the engine again, Billy.
Wait. The slimy green creatures are moving toward the lizard. Looks like a fight. Wow, where's my camera?
Start the fan first.
Wow, look at the sparks shooting out from those creatures' green arms and those red eyeballs. I've got enough pictures. Let's go.
The lizard's heading south. Do you think it'll go near Chicago?
We better get back there and warn him. Wow, that thing must be 400 feet tall.
Commander Bruton, something is very wrong on the Earth planet. Two birth pods have hatched prematurely.
What?
The Earth atmosphere in the experiment area has grown suddenly warmer, according to the thermocomputer.
Make a complete temperature check again.
Yes, Commander. It is the same report, Commander.
The experimental lake area has received its warm season earlier than our calculations predicted.
What does this mean?
All of the pods would hatch prematurely, Talon. They may even become mutants because of that.
What shall we do?
Signal my war patrol and have them meet us at this orbital quadrant. Then we'll return to the Earth Lake, hatch the remaining pods, and move against the first Earth city before they can defend themselves.
What have you kids got?
These photographs are better than any UFOs you ever saw.
He's right, Dr. Scott.
Better than UFOs? Hey, where'd you two see these green creatures?
Right where you sent us for UFO hunting.
You took all these pictures on the lake?
Right off Port Washington.
Wait a minute. Do you know what this two-legged plesiosaur is?
You tell us, Doctor.
You kids have found Godzilla again.
Again?
Yes. Scientists all over the world have been searching this creature out since the last sighting in the Atlantic Ocean. Here, look at this map. Godzilla could have entered the continent through the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Yes.
Then traveled inland through the Great Lakes until he reached Lake Michigan. Now, what can you tell me about these green, slimy-looking creatures?
I don't know if there's a connection, but we saw this thing in the sky, like a satellite or something. Then minutes later, these babies just came buzzing out of the lake.
There probably is a connection, Billy. I'm sure of UFO activity in that area.
But what about this Godzilla?
If there has been alien activity there, Godzilla could have been attracted by it. Attracted to high-frequency sound or radioactivity.
But where did Godzilla come from, originally?
He's an ancestral Tyrannosaurus rex who was jostled into radioactive life from a long, dormant state in the Sea of Japan. He's a friendly creature, really. He's just too big for the modern world.
Poor thing. Hey, fellas, you know, those green creatures look almost like overgrown string beans. Except for their big red eyes.
Yes, but dangerous string beans. I wonder how many more there are.
You think there are more?
Most likely. And if I'm not mistaken, I've got a theory as to how they got here. But what was Godzilla up to when you left?
After he killed those two, he moved south. He may be near Chicago now.
We better alert the authorities. We don't want Godzilla attacked by people who don't understand him.
You were right, Commander Bruton. Our pods have become mutants.
Are we capable of controlling them from this ship, Talem?
I believe so.
Good. We reach Earth in minutes, and then the first Earth city will be ours.
But I've already told you, Colonel, Godzilla is a friendly creature.
We can't take any chances that you're wrong, Dr. Scott.
There he is now!
Ready the artillery. Captain Warner, have you called for air support?
A flight of jet fighters will be here momentarily, Colonel.
There they are now, over the lake.
No, Colonel, those aren't our jets. Those are spacecraft.
What?
Spaceships, Colonel, from another world. And they're not alone.
More of those green creatures, Dr. Scott.
I count 20 of them, Billy.
Harriet, open and fire! Where is that air support?
There they are, Colonel.
The alien ships are much faster than our jets, Doctor.
Our boys are keeping them busy now. I want at least one of those dead alien creatures for study, Colonel. Can you arrange it?
I'll send a detachment of men to retrieve the carcasses, Doctor.
Can Linda and I help with the experiments, Dr. Scott?
Of course. You two have been quite a help to me in my studies already. And you helped save us from what appears to have been an alien invasion.
We helped, but Godzilla did the real job.
There he comes.
Goodbye, Godzilla.
Thanks, Godzilla.
An alien invasion that threatened America has been put off, at least for the time being. Perhaps they'll be back, and perhaps the aliens will attempt to conquer easier worlds, where they'll have nothing like Godzilla to contend with.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lever Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, brings you the Lux Radio Theater, starring Michael Rennie and Gene Peters in The Day the Earth Stood Still. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Irving Cummings.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. There is an ever-present question that has puzzled and intrigued our world for centuries. Is there life on any of the other planets? So in tonight's play, we will tell you of a possible momentous event in our future. The arrival of this planet, on this planet, of a man from the outer space. The day the Earth stood still. And as our stars of this provocative drama from 20th Century Fox, we have one of their fastest rising stars, Michael Rennie, co-starring with that outstanding actress, Jean Peters. Now, before raising the curtain on The Day the Earth Stood Still, starring Michael Rennie and Jean Peters, here is Ken Carpenter.
I don't know about you, but exhausted as I am from the holidays, I still hate to admit that they're really over. But maybe some of the ladies don't feel quite the same way. You probably never want to see another dish or glass that needs to be washed. On the other hand, perhaps you were as lucky as the carpenters. We had plenty of new Lux Liquid detergent on hand. Yes, ma'am, with Lux Liquid, you really get rid of messy dishes fast and easy. Put one teaspoonful of Lux Liquid into the dishpan, and the dishes literally soak clean. Just rinse, stack, and you're done. Lux Liquid's special formula actually dissolves the grease right off plates. And yet, it's mild on your hands. Lux mild. And the can it comes in is something out of the ordinary, too. It's unbreakable, and it has a wonderful new dripless spout that ends messy handling. Added to all this, Lux Liquid is really thrifty. Just one teaspoonful will do a dishpan full. And it's been proven, one can outlasts several boxes of the leading laundry powder. Yes, Lux Liquid is truly the next best thing to a dishwashing machine. As good for dishes as Lux Flakes are for nylons. And there just isn't any other care like Lux Flakes Care for nylons. It really can double the wear you get from every pair. No matter what anyone else says, remember, 96% of stocking manufacturers recommend Lux Flakes Care. And like all Lever Brothers products, Lux Liquid and Lux Flakes are unconditionally guaranteed to be all they're promised or your money back.
Now, Act One of The Day the Earth Stood Still, starring Michael Rennie as Klaatu and Jean Peters as Helen Benson.
It was a pleasant spring day, an ideal day for a walk in the park, a day to push the baby buggy and be glad you were alive. There'd been at least 20 such sparkling days that spring, and perhaps a billion or more of them since the Earth began. And nothing had ever happened to spoil them but a few small fires, or a slight head cold in the evening, or a rain squall. This spring day, in the middle of the marvelous 20th century, was different. It was the most different day that had happened to mankind since the first Christmas. The thing was noticed in Hong Kong first on the British radar.
But that's impossible. That thing must be doing about 4,000.
That can't be aircraft, sir. Must be a buzz bomb.
Better give an alarm. Keep it steady, though. Maybe faulty equipment.
If the British radar in Hong Kong was faulty, so was the radar all over the Orient and Asia and Europe. So were the announcers on the radio.
This is Moscow.
This is Calcutta, India.
This is Radio Luxembourg.
The American radar screen quickly confirmed the fact that there was nothing wrong with the British radar, and that there was something very gravely wrong 40 miles out in space, far above the Earth.
Luckton at Ferris to Baker. I have an object at 200,000 feet, 4000 miles an hour.
Then it was here. Incredibly, it was here, burning down through the sky over Washington, D.C., hovering over the mall, descending.
They're here, they're coming, they're here!
Not a sound. Stillness. Not a move from the cordon of tanks and armored cars and troops in full battle dress. Not a sound or gesture from the monstrous domed disc resting on the grass.
The ship designed for travel outside the Earth's atmosphere landed in Washington today at 3:47 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We still do not know where it came from. The ship is now resting exactly where it landed 2 hours ago. So far, there is no sign of life from inside the ship. Behind the cordon of troops, tanks, and artillery is a huge crowd of curiosity seekers. Every eye, every weapon is trained on the ship. The atmosphere is one of terrific tension rather than of fear. It's been that way for... Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen. I think something's happening. The spaceship is opening up. Someone is coming out.
Keep calm, everybody. Don't get excited. Keep calm. Quiet.
A wedge is opened in the smooth, unbroken metal skin of the spaceship. A ramp slithers out on the grass. Against an eerie glow of unearthly light from inside the spaceship stands the spaceman. He is a man, entirely like ourselves. He wears a close-fitting suit like a deep-sea diver's armor, but of alien material. A spherical helmet entirely conceals his head. He holds up his hand. He is going to speak.
We have come to visit you in peace and with goodwill. Receive me as a friend.
Here he comes, men. Watch it. Keep that BAR trained on him.
He's going for something in his tunic, sir.
Quiet.
It's a ray gun or something. I'm going to let him have it.
No, no, wait. You fool, he's down. Hold back that crowd. Everybody, back. Your wound doesn't look too bad. I'm sorry, but you shouldn't have gone for that ray gun.
It was not a weapon.
He understands us.
It was a gift for your president. With it, you might have studied life on other planets.
What's bothering the crowd, Lieutenant? Tell him to... Oh, no. Oh, no!
A nightmare stands on the ramp leading out of the spaceship. A mechanical giant, monstrous, all metal and menace, with a visor in his helmet lifting slowly, revealing a dreadful light boiling within that metal head. And suddenly, out of that incandescence, a narrow ray. Rifles, tanks, artillery glow with that terrible incandescence and become vapor in a mush of puddled steel. And in the deathly silence that follows, the robot strides down the ramp. The Avenger. From where?
God! The Glet of Roscoe! He won't hurt you now.
Let's get you to a hospital.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
The doctors here tell me your wound is not serious.
No. It amazes them that it's almost healed already.
I'm very glad.
It should serve as some sort of indication of our powers.
My name is Harley, secretary to the president. I've been told you speak our language fluently, that your name is Mr. Klaatu.
Just Klaatu.
The president has asked me to convey our deepest apologies for what has happened.
Sit down, Mr. Harley.
I'm sure I don't have to point out that your arrival was something of a surprise. Had you been traveling long?
About 5 months. Your months?
You must have come a long way.
About 250 million of your miles.
Naturally, we're very curious to know where you come from.
From another planet. Let's just say that we're neighbors.
It's rather difficult for us to think of another planet as a neighbor.
I'm afraid in the present situation you'll have to learn to think that way.
The present situation?
I mean the reasons for my coming here.
Would you care to talk about it?
Not now, or with you alone.
Perhaps you'd rather discuss it personally with the president.
I want to meet with the representatives from all the nations of the Earth.
I'm afraid that would be a little awkward.
Why?
In view of the tensions and suspicions in our world today, such a meeting would be impossible.
Mr. Harley, my mission here concerns the existence of every last creature who lives on Earth. It must not be complicated by the childish jealousies, intrigues, suspicions of your planet.
Our problems are very complex. You mustn't judge us too harshly.
I'm impatient with stupidity. My people have learned to live without it.
The president will, of course, do his best to bring about the meeting you desire. I know it'll be quite useless. I wish it were otherwise. I'm very sorry, Mr. Klaatu.
Wait. Before making any grave decisions, I think I should get out among your people. Become familiar with the basis for these strange, unreasoning attitudes.
Our military people insist that you do not attempt to leave the hospital. The door will be locked. I'm sure you understand. Good day, Mr. Klaatu.
The door will be locked. Will it now?
Klaatu escaped, nor could the embarrassing news of his disappearance long be suppressed. It was read about in the papers and described in excited tones over the radio.
Authorities at Walter Reed Hospital still refuse to comment on how he managed to escape, except to say that he broke into a hospital locker and stole clothing belonging to a staff doctor. While the government does not minimize the crisis...
This was the latest and the only news. And among the countless millions listening were two men and a woman in an ordinary home on an ordinary street in Washington. Mrs. Crockett's rooming house. There was Mrs. Crockett and Helen Benson and little Bobby Benson.
We may be up against powers that are beyond our control or understanding.
Oh, I just can't stand any more of this.
Oh, I wanted to hear more, Mrs. Crockett.
It's exciting, isn't it, Mother?
Hush, Bobby.
Exciting? It's enough to drive a person... Oh! Who are you?
I'm sorry. I saw your sign outside and the door was open. My name is Carpenter.
Yes?
I'm looking for a room.
Oh, yes. I do have a nice room.
Are you a G-man?
No, I'm afraid I'm not.
I bet he is, Mom. I bet he's looking for that spaceman.
I think we've all been hearing too much about spacemen, Mr. Carpenter.
This is Mrs. Benson, Mr. Carpenter.
How do you do?
And this is little Bobby, my youngest guest.
Hi.
I'm Mrs. Crockett. You're a long way from home, aren't you, Mr. Carpenter?
How did you know?
Oh, I can tell a New England accent every time. This way, please, Mr. Carpenter. And so this Sunday morning, we asked the question that has been plaguing the entire world for 2 days now. Where is the creature, and what is he up to?
Eat your cereal, Bobby.
Oh, Mom, I'm all muscle as it is.
Bobby.
Okay, Mr. Carpenter.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Crockett. Please, go on reading.
Creature, and what is he up to? If he can build a spaceship that can fly to Earth, and a robot that can destroy our tanks and guns, what other terrors can he unleash at will?
What a man.
Obviously, we must track down this monster and destroy him before he destroys us. Correct. Then why don't they do it?
This spaceman, or whatever he is, we automatically assume he's a menace. Maybe he isn't, after all.
Well, then where is he, Mrs. Benson? What's he up to?
Maybe he's afraid.
Oh, he's afraid.
Well, after all, he was shot the minute he landed here. I just was wondering what I'd do.
Perhaps before deciding upon a course of action, you'd want to know more about the people here.
Nothing strange about Washington.
A person from another planet might disagree with you.
Oh, it's all right, Mrs. Crockett. That's Mr. Stevens calling for me. I'll go to the door.
That awful robot standing there like an ugly iron statue is giving me the shivers.
Morning, Tom.
Hello, Helen. Hey, can anybody see us?
No.
So, all right, we're all set. I picked up some sandwiches and put gas in the car and the radio is busted so we can forget about the spaceman for today, huh?
I haven't been able to arrange for anyone to stay with Bobby. Mrs. Crockett's going out and I don't suppose we could take him with us.
Well, we could.
Just today. Mrs. Crockett has plans and I don't know who else to ask.
I haven't any plans.
Oh, Mr. Carpenter.
I'd be glad to spend the day with Bobby. If you'd let me.
Oh, great, thanks.
Well, it's very nice of you to offer. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Carpenter, this is Tom Stevens.
Hi.
How do you do? Bobby and I had a fine time yesterday afternoon. I thought he might show me around the city today.
Well...
Please, I'd enjoy it.
And this is where my father is buried. Robert Benson, Virginia, 1st Lieutenant, 45th Infantry. April 10th, 1916, January 29th, 1944.
Your father was very young, wasn't he, Bobby?
He was killed at Anzio.
Did all these people here die in wars?
Well, most of them. Didn't you ever hear of Arlington Cemetery?
I'm afraid not.
You don't seem to know much about anything, Mr. Carpenter.
I've been far away, Bobby.
Don't they have places like this where you've been?
Not like this one. You see, they don't have any wars. Let's walk.
All right.
What would you like to do now?
Go to the movies.
All right.
No fooling?
No fooling. Do you have to have money to go there?
Well, I've got $2. I'll treat you, okay?
No, I want to take you. Look, do you think they'd accept these?
Oh, gee, what are they? Diamonds?
Well, in some places, these are what people use for money. They're easy to carry and they don't wear out.
I bet they're worth $1 million.
Would you give me your $2 for two of these?
Sure, okay.
There you are.
Let's not say anything to Mom about this, huh?
Why not?
Well, she doesn't like me to take advantage of people. Hey, before we go to the movies, would you like to see the Abraham Lincoln Memorial?
Thank you. Yes, I would.
Well, this is it. That's the Gettysburg speech up there.
That this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. Those are great words.
That's some statue.
That's the kind of man I'd like to talk to. Bobby, who is the greatest man in America today?
Oh, gee, I don't know. The spaceman, I guess.
I was speaking of Earthmen.
Oh, I don't know. The president?
I mean the greatest philosopher, the greatest thinker, scholar.
Oh, well, that's Professor Barnhart, I guess.
Yes, Professor Barnhart.
He's the greatest scientist in the world, and he lives right here in Washington, right near where my mother works.
Where is that?
Department of Commerce. She's a secretary. Why?
I have an idea, Bobby. Let's go see Professor Barnhart.
What for?
You just said he's the greatest man in America.
You're kidding, aren't you?
Wouldn't you like to meet him?
Oh, sure I would. Oh, go on. I bet you'd be scared.
Maybe we can scare him more than he can scare us.
I like you, Mr. Carpenter. You're a real screwball. Gee, maybe the professor isn't at home.
Let's take a look through that window.
I'll bet this is where he works. Look in there. Books all over. Blackboard's full of stuff. That door's locked, too.
Is it? I know it isn't, Bobby.
Well, that's funny.
We'll go in and wait for him. I'm sure he won't mind.
Gee, just think. All the brains that goes on in here. What's all that stuff on the blackboard?
It's a problem in celestial mechanics.
And what's the matter?
You'll never get the answer that way. Let's see.
Hey, it says don't erase, don't touch.
Now, this is right. Check. Correct. Correct. And here's where he gets off the track. Now we'll fix that. So.
You must be an arithmetic teacher, I bet.
Differentiate the equation. There.
Who are you?
Uh-oh.
How dare you come in like this? How dare you write on that blackboard? Do you realize the professor's been working on that problem for weeks?
He'll solve it in no time now.
What do you want?
We came to see Professor Barnhart.
Well, he's not here, and he won't be back until evening. I think you better leave.
Will you tell him that Mr. Carpenter was here? 1615 M Street, Northwest. I think he'll want to talk to me.
Indeed.
Thank you. Oh, it may have entered your mind to erase what I've written on the blackboard.
It certainly has.
I wouldn't do that. The professor needs it very badly. Come on, Bobby.
Carpenter, 1650 M Street, Northwest. Carpenter, M Street. Operator! Give me the police.
Act two of The Day the Earth Stood Still in a few moments after we see if Francis Scully has any big news for us tonight.
Oh, I do, Ken, about a big man in a big picture. The picture is Warner Brothers Wayne Fellows production, Hondo, in 3D.
And the big man must be John Wayne, even bigger in 3D.
Oh, and better than ever, too. For his leading lady, John drew one of last year's most talked about and talented Broadway actresses, Geraldine Page.
Oh, yes. Hondo is her first Hollywood picture, isn't it?
That's right.
And isn't that the one that was filmed in a really wild part of Mexico?
Camargo, Mexico, Ken, where it's hot as well as wild. In the picture, John plays a part Indian dispatch rider for the U.S. Cavalry around 1870. Geraldine is lovely as the woman he falls in love with.
Ah, she's a fine actress. Knows a good thing when she sees it, too, because she's a real Lux girl. You'll be getting in on a good thing, too, once you use mild and gentle Lux toilet soap. 9 out of 10 Hollywood stars, like Geraldine Page, have found that really there's no soap quite like Lux. And now our producer, Mr. Cummings.
Act two of The Day the Earth Stood Still, starring Michael Rennie as Klaatu and Jean Peters as Helen Benson.
It is early evening of the same day, Tom Stevens and Helen Benson drive up to the boarding house after their picnic, quite unaware of the dark squad car parked at the curb a few feet ahead.
Well, here we are.
Thank you, Tom. It was a wonderful day.
You still haven't answered my question.
Oh, you know how I feel, Tom. But I still want time to think it over.
If I could only tell the boss I was getting married and acquiring two dependents.
You're a good salesman.
A good salesman wouldn't give you time to think about it.
Good night.
Didn't you forget something? Now, good night.
Good night.
Night.
Oh, Mr. Carpenter.
Hi, Mom.
Hello, darling.
Mrs. Benson, this is Mr. Brady.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Mr. Brady's a government agent.
Oh? Did you have a nice day, Bobby?
We had a swell time, didn't we, Mr. Carpenter?
Yes, we did.
We went to the movies and had a banana split, and we went to see Daddy.
Oh, I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Carpenter.
I enjoyed every minute of it.
We better get going.
Yes. Good night, Bobby.
Good night.
I'll tell you the rest of that story tomorrow. Good night, Mrs. Benson.
Good night.
Nice meeting you, Mrs. Benson.
Thank you.
Why did Mr. Carpenter have to go with Mr. Brady?
I don't know. Maybe it was a mistake. Upstairs with you.
Yeah. We sure had fun today. We went all over Washington, and we went to see Professor Barnhart.
Professor Barnhart?
Oh, sure.
Barnhart. Up to bed now. Pronto.
Is this the man you wanted to see, Professor Barnhart?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Brady. If I may speak to Mr. Carpenter alone, please.
I'll wait outside, Professor.
You are Mr. Carpenter?
Yes, Professor.
Who wrote those equations on my blackboard?
My clumsy way of introducing myself.
Forgive the manner in which you were picked up. Hilda called the police before I saw your annotations on the board.
I appreciate the need for security, Professor.
I have not quite fathomed the problem, even with your remarkable assistance, Mr. Carpenter.
Let's look at it, sir. All you have to do now is substitute this expression at this point.
Yes, that will reproduce the first order term, but what about the effect of the other terms?
Negligible. With variation of parameters, this is the answer.
How can you be so sure? Have you tested this theory?
I find it works well enough to get me from one planet to another.
Klaatu.
I spent 2 days at your Walter Reed Hospital. I was interviewed by.
I need no proof. This blackboard is proof.
If you are not interested, or if you intend to turn me over to the army, we needn't waste any more time.
Interested? Will you excuse me one moment, please? Mr. Brady, you may go now. Please thank General Cutler and tell him that I know this gentleman. So much for that, Klaatu. Now, please, sit down.
You have faith, Professor.
Faith and curiosity. Do sit down. I have several thousand questions to ask you.
I would like to explain my mission here.
That is my first question.
It was my hope to discuss this officially with all the nations of the world. I was not allowed the opportunity. Now, we know from scientific observation that your planet has discovered a rudimentary kind of atomic energy. We also know that you're experimenting with rockets.
Yes, that is true. What exactly is the nature of your mission?
To warn you that your planet faces danger. What I have to say must be said to all concerned. I come to you as a last resort. Must I take drastic action in order to get a hearing?
What sort of action do you mean?
Violent action? Perhaps leveling the island of Manhattan? Or toppling the Rock of Gibraltar into the sea? Well?
Would you, for example, be willing to meet with a group of scientists I'm calling together? We're having our first meeting tonight. Perhaps you could explain your mission to them, and they in turn could present it to their various peoples.
That is what I came to see you about.
One thing, Klaatu. Suppose this group should reject your proposals. What is the alternative?
There is no alternative, Professor. In such a case, the planet Earth would have to be eliminated.
such power exists?
I assure you, such power exists.
The scientists who are attending these meetings have come here from all over the world. Now, this power you speak of, they must be made to realize that it exists. Now, you mentioned a demonstration of force.
Yes.
Something that would affect the entire planet?
That can be arranged.
Perhaps a little demonstration.
Something dramatic but not destructive. It's quite an interesting problem. Would tomorrow be all right?
If you say so.
Say about noon?
Then tomorrow at noon. Good.
Going out tonight, Mrs. Benson?
Oh, it's you, Mr. Carpenter.
I'm afraid I startled you.
Yes, I am going out. Mr. Stevens is calling for me.
Everyone seems so...
Jittery is the word.
Bobby's the only person I know who isn't jittery. He's a fine boy, Mrs. Benson.
Naturally, I think so.
Warm, friendly, intelligent. He's the only real friend I've made since I've been here.
Mr. Carpenter, this is none of my business, but why did that detective come here last night, that Mr. Brady?
Bobby and I tried to see Professor Barnhart in the afternoon, but he wasn't in. Apparently, they thought I was looking for secrets of some kind.
Well, that must be Tom now.
Oh, Mr. Stevens, do come in. Helen is in the sitting room.
Alert Mrs. Crockett. She has a romantic mind.
Hello there, Helen. Got a minute to spare. You ready? Hello, Carpenter. Picture starts at 8:50 on the dot, Helen.
I'll be ready in a minute. I was just talking to Mr. Carpenter.
Oh, I hope Mr. Carpenter won't think I'm intruding.
Excuse me. I was just going up to my room. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Carpenter.
Have a good time, both of you.
Thank you. Tom, that was awful.
I'm sorry. I guess I'm just tired of hearing about Mr. Carpenter. Mr. Carpenter. Shh. I don't like the way he's attached himself to you and Bobby. After all, what do you know about him?
Very little, it's true. Well, let's not stand and talk about it anymore. I'll go up and get my things.
Gee, Mr. Carpenter, thanks a lot for helping me with my homework.
That's all there is to it, Bobby, my boy. All you have to remember is first find the common denominator, then subtract.
I got you. Thanks, Mr. Carpenter.
I'm leaving with Tom, Bobby. You'll go to bed on time now, won't you?
I'll say goodnight again, Mrs. Benson.
Mr. Carpenter...
Yes?
Nothing. Good night.
Good night. Night, Bobby.
Bobby, I think it would be better if you didn't see quite so much of Mr. Carpenter.
Well, gee, why, Mom? He's swell. I like him. And he's awful good at arithmetic. He even helped Professor Barnhart.
I'm sure he's a very nice man. I just think he might prefer to be left alone. Now, go to bed, darling.
But why would he want to be left alone?
Don't forget to brush your teeth.
Come in.
Bobby, do you have a flashlight I might borrow for tonight?
Oh, sure, Mr. Carpenter. It's a real Boy Scout one.
Thank you, Bobby.
Why do you want it?
The light in my room went out. See you tomorrow. Better get into bed now.
Gee, I wonder if the batteries are any good. Mr. Carpenter!
Bobby went to the door and opened it. What he saw down the hallway puzzled him. Mr. Carpenter's door was ajar and light was pouring out of his room.
Funny. He said his light went out.
Then Mr. Carpenter came out carrying the flashlight and stealing down the steps like a thief. This was peculiar, but this was adventure. Bobby followed Mr. Carpenter, and what he saw couldn't have been a dream. It was too real. But it couldn't have been true either. It was too deliciously frightful. Dream or not, it was filled with darkness, stung by staccato flashes from a genuine Boy Scout flashlight. Flashes that activated a giant robot into knocking out his guards so that Mr. Carpenter from the boarding house could get into the shed the army had built around the spaceship. And dream or not, Bobby saw this Mr. Carpenter go into the spaceship. And then a wave of sheer terror swept over Bobby at last, and he turned and ran wildly away. The way little boys always run in nightmares, trying so hard and moving so slowly and all the time falling down. It was awful. It was swell. When his mother came home around midnight, Bobby was curled up on the sofa. Instantly, he jumped up and ran to her and to Tom Stevens as they came into the hallway.
Mom, listen.
Bobby, what are you doing down here at this hour, fully dressed?
Hello, Mr. Stevens. Mom, I had to tell you.
Tell me what?
What's the matter, Bobby?
I followed Mr. Carpenter tonight, right after you left, and gee, where do you think he went? Right into the spaceship.
Now, Bobby, just 1 minute.
Honest, Mom, I saw him. They got a shed built around the spaceship so nobody can get to it. But Mr. Carpenter flashed a signal to that Iron Man up there, and what do you think?
Bobby, have you been dreaming again?
Why, sure.
No, Mom, honest, I haven't. I promise you, I saw it.
Where did you see all of this?
Well, I'm telling you, on the lawn, down at the mall. In that place where the soldiers are all out in front.
And where were the soldiers all this time?
Well, that robot fella grabbed him and knocked him out.
Oh, Bobby.
Yeah, and then Mr. Carpenter walked into the shed, and the spaceship opened up, and he walked right inside, and it closed again. Gee, I like Mr. Carpenter, but I'm scared, Mom.
Oh, darling, it was just a bad dream. We'll prove it to you. Tom, will you see if Mr. Carpenter's still up? Ask him to come down here a minute.
Helen.
Yes, Tom?
Helen, he's not there, but look what I found on the carpet.
It can't be a diamond, can it?
I don't know.
But it's much too big.
Oh, but it looks real to me.
Oh, Mr. Carpenter's got lots of them. He gave a couple of them to me. Here.
He gave you these?
Well, not exactly. I gave him $2.
I don't know, but this whole thing, it just doesn't make sense. Look, Helen, do you think it's all right for you to stay here?
There's a strong lock on my door. And Bobby's going to sleep in my room tonight.
Okay.
Upstairs, nightmare boy.
It wasn't a nightmare.
Bobby.
Yeah, Mom?
Bobby, your shoes are soaking wet.
Yeah, grass on the mall was kind of wet. Good night, all.
Oh, Tom. I wonder.
Klaatu had promised what Professor Barnhart termed a little demonstration. Promised it for the following day at noon. It is now 12:02. In the Department of Commerce building, Helen Benson has left her office on her way to lunch. She stands in the corridor waiting for an elevator.
Mrs. Benson.
Mr. Carpenter, what are you doing here?
I came to see you.
Well, I was just going to lunch. What is it?
I saw Bobby this morning before he went to school.
Yes?
I want to know what he told you.
Oh, Bobby has such an active imagination.
Did you believe what he told you?
Really, Mr. Carpenter, this is where I work, and I only have a short time for lunch today. If you'll excuse me...
I'll go down with you.
If you like. The service elevator's open. You'll have to press the button, Mr. Carpenter.
Oh, yes, yes.
It was just 5 seconds before noon of that fateful day when Helen Benson and Mr. Carpenter stepped into that electric elevator. At that same moment, the enormous commerce of our briskly modern world roared and thundered in the streets. Five seconds to noon. 4 seconds. 3 seconds. 2 seconds. 1. 0. High noon. And silence. All over the world, traffic stopped dead in a million streets. Here and there, a horse-drawn vehicle clopped its melancholy way among the motionless motors. Bicycles moved before awe and the common desolation made the riders stop of their own free will. Electric clocks stopped on the dot of noon. All across the powered world, the machines stood still. Toasters failed to pop and battle fleets on maneuvers drifted aimlessly on their dead propellers. Joe Smith's milkshake didn't spin, and the humming turbines deep in Hoover Dam didn't produce current. Mrs. Housewife's washer stopped in the middle of its cycle, and electric lights went out all over the world. At a conference table in Washington, a hasty council of the armed services was held.
As far as we can tell, gentlemen, all electric power has been cut off all over, with few exceptions. And even these exceptions are remarkable. Hospitals, planes in flight, that sort of thing. I wish I could be more specific, but all communications are out. I can tell you that we are preparing to declare a state of national emergency, but before we start discussing plans, I want a report from Colonel Ryder.
All I can report, General, is that the robot at the spaceship was discovered to have moved last night. It knocked unconscious the two soldiers guarding the entrance to the shed the Army engineers had built around the spaceship, indicating that someone, presumably the spaceman, had wanted to get into the ship for one reason or another.
In all likelihood, to signal for this demonstration of his planet's power. Go on, Colonel.
Well, that's all, sir.
Well, gentlemen, until now, we've agreed on the desirability of capturing this man alive. We can no longer afford to be soft in this matter. We will get him alive if possible, but we must get him. Is that clear, gentlemen? Dead or alive, get him.
Before we continue with Act 3 of The Day the Earth Stood Still, I want to say hello again to a very pretty, very young lady who still attends high school on the 20th Century Fox lot, when she's not making pictures, that is, Gloria Gordon.
Good evening, Mr. Cummings.
Gloria, I want to congratulate you on your splendid performance in 20th Century Fox's CinemaScope thriller, Beneath the 12-Mile Reef.
Well, it was a break for me getting to work with Terry Moore, Robert Wagner, and Gilbert Rowland. I'm Bob's sister in the picture, you know. It's my first CinemaScope appearance, too.
Those Technicolor deep-sea diving scenes are beautiful as well as exciting. A fine picture like Beneath the 12-Mile Reef can start a career zooming, Gloria. I'm sure it will yours.
And that peaches and cream complexion won't hurt a bit either, Gloria.
Thanks, Mr. Carpenter. You can call mine a Lux complexion if you like, because I use Lux all the time to keep my skin looking just right. I think there's nothing like it.
You know, it's hard to find a movie star who doesn't depend on Lux complexion care. In the bath, too, Lux toilet soap is so gentle, so refreshing. And like all Lever Brothers products, Lux toilet soap is unconditionally guaranteed. If it isn't all we say it is, your money will be returned. We pause now for station identification. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Curtain rises on Act 3 of The Day the Earth Stood Still, starring Michael Rennie as Klaatu and Jean Peters as Helen Benson.
All over the world, electric power has been neutralized on the stroke of noon as a token of the spaceman's power and as a warning to the Earth. While they've been trapped between floors in an elevator, the spaceman has told Helen his identity and purpose here.
I've already told you more than I told Professor Barnhart, because my life, in a sense, is in your hands. But if I die, a world, your world, may die too.
Yes, I understand.
I thought if you knew the facts, you'd appreciate the importance of my not being caught before the meeting tonight with the world scientists.
Yes, of course. Of course I do. You hold great hope for this meeting, don't you?
I can see no other hope for your planet. If the meeting should fail, then I'm afraid there is no hope.
Oh, the lights. And we started again.
It must be 12:30.
Yes, exactly. Where are you going now?
Back to the boarding house. I'll be safe there for the afternoon. I'll be able to keep an eye on Bobby. He's the only other person who knows about me.
No. Wait a minute. There is someone else.
How? There can't be.
Tom. He was with me last night when Bobby told me what he saw.
Oh.
Well, of course, he doesn't know anything definite, and, well, he talked to me first before... But then we can't take a chance, can we?
Can you get in touch with him?
I think so.
I mean at once, now.
I'll try.
You will. You must.
Operator, I was connected with my party. Please. Hello? Oh, is this Mr. Tom Stevens' office again? We were Well, I must speak to Mrs. No, Mr. Stevens, yes, this is Mrs. Benson. Benson! Well, when do you expect him in, then? Well, will you tell him I called, and please not to leave his office? I'm coming down to see him. Yes, yes, it's very important. To you, too.
Margaret, this is Mr. Stevens. I just got in. Now, listen, call the Pentagon. Who? Mrs. Benson, when? Never mind. This is more important. Listen. Now, call the Pentagon and find out who's in charge of the spaceman business. Whoever it is, I want to talk to him.
Tom.
Call me back right away and don't take any other calls. Brush him off fast.
Tom, I've been trying to get you all afternoon.
I've got some pretty terrific news about your good friend, Mr. Carpenter.
What about him?
He's the man from the spaceship. I had that diamond or whatever it is checked at 3 different places. Nobody on Earth's ever seen a stone like that. And after what Bobby's told us, that's enough for me. Why is it nobody knows about this Mr. Carpenter? Why hasn't he got any money?
All right, Tom. It's true.
Yeah. How do you know?
You've just got to promise me you won't say a word to anybody.
Oh, nobody but the Pentagon.
Please, Tom.
Are you crazy? After what happened today, he's a menace.
You don't understand. You don't realize how important this is.
Important. Of course it's important, and we can do something about it.
You mustn't do anything about it, Tom. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about.
I say he is dangerous. It is our duty to turn him in.
He isn't dangerous. He isn't a menace. He told me what he came here for.
Oh, honey, don't be silly. Because you happen to like the guy, do you realize what this will mean for us? I'll be the biggest man in the country. I'll write my own ticket.
Is that what you're thinking about?
Listen, somebody's got to get rid of him.
Tom, I'm not going to let you do it. Tom, don't.
Hello, Margaret. Yeah. General Cutler? Good. Now, hold on.
You don't know what you're doing. It isn't just you and Mr. Carpenter.
Mr. Carpenter.
It's everybody. The rest of the world is involved.
I don't give a hang about the rest of the world. I'm in this for me.
Tom.
Now, you'll feel different when you see my picture in the papers.
I feel different right now.
Well, you'll see. You're going to marry a hero.
I'm not going to marry anybody. Not even a hero.
Hey, Helen. Hello? General Cutler? General, my name is Tom Stevens, with a V. I have positive information about the spaceman and where he's staying. Right. Yeah, of course I'm sure. He's living in a boarding house at 1615 M Street, Northwest. That is correct, General.
Yes, I have all of it now, Mr. Stevens, and thank you very much indeed. I don't want to talk to you further, but I haven't time now. We want to act on this.
Yes, sir.
Have Colonel Ryder deploy all Zone 5 units according to Plan B immediately. Investigate 1615 M Street Northwest for presence of spaceman. Repeat.
Mr. Carpenter.
Right here. Did you see Tom? What does he say?
It's no good. It's too late. I got a taxi outside. Hurry.
Attention, Zone 5. Attention, Zone 5. Man and woman observed entering taxi at 1615 M Street Northwest. Man is probably Klaatu, alias Carpenter. Establish roadblocks according to Plan Baker and maintain station. Remain on radio alert until further orders.
I don't know. I think we may have been seen getting into the taxi.
Where can you go?
Shh. I'm sure Barnhart can arrange to hide me until the meeting tonight.
Where's it going to be?
At the ship. Now, look there. Army cars.
Full troops in full gear.
The alarm is out, all right.
Well, it's only a few more blocks to Professor Barnhart's.
I'm worried about Gort. I'm afraid of what he might do if anything should happen to me.
Gort? But he's a robot.
He's a product of centuries of refinement.
But what could he do without you?
There's no limit to what he could do. He could destroy the Earth.
And the city is swarming with patrol cars, hunting you. How can we tell them?
They won't listen. You must listen. If anything happens to me, you must go to Gort. You must give him this message. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto. Gort. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto. Say it.
Gort. Klaatu, Barada...
Nikto.
Gort. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto. Klaatu, Barada, Nikto.
Remember those words.
Klaatu, Barada, Nikto.
Attention, Zone 5. Taxicab moving north on 14th Street from Harvard Street. Man and woman in back seat. License number H0012. H0012. Section 2, close in. This is your target vehicle.
We're hemmed in. Driver will get out here. I'm going to try to run for it. If they get me, you get to Gort. Now.
There he is! Stop or we'll shoot! Stop or we'll fire!
Mr. Carpenter!
Gort! Run!
Oh. Never mind, I'll check the guy.
Piranha! Nikto! Klaatu! Piranha! Nikto! Klaatu!
Centuries, ages of superhuman, superplanetary skill had bred intuition and a dim power of reason into the enormously complex intelligence inside of Gort's metal brain case. When Helen Benson stumbled up to the shed that housed the space machine, the guards were not there. Then she saw them. They were lying inside, their rifles fused and bent. Gort somehow knew that Klaatu was dead. Gort was already on the move. He was on the move toward Helen.
No! No! Gort, no!
The visor of his helmet was opening on that cosmic incandescence within, seething with world ruin, aiming impassively at Helen.
Gort! Gort! Klaatu! Klaatu! Marana! Para!
Helen Benson fainted. When she returned to consciousness, she was lying on a dais bathed in a soft, shadowless light in a chamber vaguely circular of completely unfamiliar build. She was in the space machine. Across the room stood Gort with his back to her, and lying in front of him on a platform was Klaatu.
Mr. Carpenter.
Gort, the machine, the automaton, was applying electrodes to his master, and a piercing, whining, maddening sound filled the ship. Klaatu moved. He sat up. Stood up.
Mr. Carpenter.
Hello.
I thought you were...
I was. They took me to an emergency hospital at the city jail. Gort broke in and took me back here. This technique can restore life in some cases, and only for a limited time.
How long?
No one can tell. Time enough and more for me to go outside and speak to Professor Bernhardt's scientists. I must speak to them. It's what I came for. Gort will put out the ramp.
You people of Earth, you men of science, you are here from all over your world, Europe, Asia, representing many nations, many ideas. I am leaving soon. You will forgive me if I speak bluntly. The universe grows smaller every day. Where I come from, we believe there must be security for all, or no one is secure. This does not mean giving up any freedom, except the freedom to act irresponsibly. This is the message that I ask you to take back when you return to your native lands. Tell your people and your governments that we have created a race of robots whose function it is to patrol the planets in spaceships and preserve the peace. At the first sign of treachery, they will act automatically. Nothing you have here on Earth can stop them. The penalty for provoking their action is too terrible to risk. Your choice is simple. Live in peace or perish in violence. We shall be waiting for your answer. The decision rests with you. Gott, Baringo. Remember.
I'll remember, Mr. Carpenter.
Seen him come, so did they see him depart. And the people of the earth pondered upon the warning.
In a moment, our stars will return. And now, here's Mr. Cummings with our stars.
And here they are after two out-of-this-world performances, Michael Rennie and Gene Peters. Mike, have you ever seen any UMOs?
What's a UMO?
An unidentifiable moving object. Yes, I saw several years ago in London.
You mean during the war?
No, when I was a very young actor. But the flying objects were later identified as ripe tomatoes and eggs and cauliflower.
And how about you, Gene? Seen any flying saucers?
Oh, actresses aren't interested in such things, Irving. We prefer King of the Khyber rifles. After all, who cares about spacemen when you can see Tyrone Power and Michael Rennie in their latest picture, co-starring with Terry Moore?
Oh, Marilyn Monroe, Betty Grable, and Lauren Bacall in How to Marry a Millionaire.
And both these 20th Century Fox pictures are in Technicolor and CinemaScope. And these exciting new mediums are especially interesting to actresses.
Then you stars must be especially interested in Lux soap for your complexion.
We certainly are. I, for one, started using Lux soap for my complexion years ago, and I'm certainly glad I did. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, and happy landing.
Godzilla, a prehistoric monster born in the modern world. Some say a friend, some say foe. And where will he surface next? Our story begins in the fabled Bermuda Triangle.
Reel in, Mr. Bishop. I don't want to get caught in the Bermuda Triangle waters without daylight.
You don't believe those Bermuda Triangle legends, Captain? What?
What's wrong, Mr. Bishop?
Look, out in the water. That fin must be 100 feet high.
Getting out of here.
It's some kind of giant lizard or something, fighting a sea creature.
Maybe now you don't think those Bermuda Triangle stories are so funny.
Let's just get out of here, Captain. Those creatures may get tired of fighting each other and come at us.
So, Godzilla is in the Bermuda Triangle off the Florida coast. And what is this other sea creature Mr. Bishop saw on his supposedly uneventful fishing trip? It is an hour since the two men first sighted Godzilla and Amphibion, and they haven't spoken a word until...
I've reversed the engine so we can ease into our mooring, Mr. Bishop. You okay, sir?
I guess so.
Come on, I'll buy you a drink at the Miami Marina Bar. Here, Mr. Bishop, have another drink. You'll be okay.
I'm okay.
You're going to go over the deep end if you don't get a grip on yourself, sir.
Don't you think we ought to report what we saw?
Now, look, sir. You yourself were skeptical about the Bermuda Triangle legends. You go to the authorities describing a giant prehistoric lizard that spits fire and some kind of sea monster. Well, They'll just put you away for a long time.
But we saw them, Captain. You saw those monsters. They're real.
But I know just when to keep my mouth shut, sir. Have another drink, Mr. Bishop.
I don't want any more. We gotta report what we saw, Captain. Don't you understand? Less than 60 miles off the Miami coast, there are two of the most monstrous creatures any man's ever seen.
Captain Thompson to Patrick Air Base. We finished our run and we're coming home.
Well done, Captain. Safe trip home.
Well, how do you feel, son?
Fine, Dad. I'm glad you let me come this time.
Well, this was just a distance run. We're over the Bermuda Triangle now.
Boy, the water sure looks blue down there. See the way the sun shines across it?
The sea is a beautiful but unpredictable lady.
Oh, wow. Look at that, Dad. The water seems to be spinning around in that one spot down there.
Near that fishing boat. Mm-hmm. Let's go down for a closer look.
Dad, there's something coming out of the water near the boat. Dad, it's a giant fin.
There's something else in the water, son. Behind the fin. I'll get as close as I can. Get that camera ready. Captain Jennings is a trained paleontologist, Tommy. He'll know what to make of these pictures we took.
Come in. Oh, Rick Thompson and Tommy. How are you two?
Okay, Larry, but this isn't a friendly visit.
What's wrong, Rick?
You heard about the fishing boat swamped off the coast this afternoon? Take a look at these pictures we got of it.
Oh, sure, Rick, but you shouldn't have hung around for pictures during a storm in the Triangle.
There wasn't any storm in the Triangle today. You're not looking at the photos.
No storm? Well, how'd the boat sink? What are these pictures supposed to be?
You tell us, Larry.
If I didn't know better, Rick, I'd say you've got the next best thing to the Loch Ness Monster here. That fin is, what, 100 feet out of the water, judging by the boat in this photo?
Look at all the pictures, Larry.
You two have really stumbled onto something here.
Yes. But what, Larry?
Isn't that a giant lizard or something, Captain Jennings?
Well, technically, a plesiosaur, Tommy. An ancestor of Tyrannosaurus rex. It stood on two legs, had small frontal arms and large, wide jaws for ripping and tearing flesh.
We photographed that plesiosaur, whatever it is, from my plane this afternoon in the Triangle, chasing whatever that fin thing is.
I wonder, is it possible?
Is what possible, Larry?
Godzilla. I thought the Japanese had killed him years ago. Is still alive.
Are you asking me to believe this story about sea creatures and giant lizards?
It's a player, sir, Commander Radley. Perhaps 400 feet tall.
I can see the photograph, Captain Jennings, and I still don't believe it.
Commander, 2 days ago, a chartered fishing boat out of Miami encountered these two creatures in the same general area. One of the men on board has been put under observation, but his description of what nearly swamped their boat fits what you see in these photos.
That's right, Commander.
Well, I... What? When? Yes, sir. I'll dispatch them immediately.
What is it, Commander Radley?
You're to lead a flight of nuclear fighter jets to the Miami Beach area, Captain Thompson.
Now, sir?
Immediately. It seems a commercial airline pilot has just made a most fantastic report to the Miami airport.
And?
He says he saw a huge lizard, gentlemen. And another equally fantastic creature with a large fin on its back and long, sharp claws. The, lizard was chasing the fin creature towards Miami Beach.
Godzilla is a plesiosaur, Commander.
Whatever, Jennings. Now, Rick, your orders are to stop them any way you can. You'll carry nuclear rockets. The civilians there will be ordered inland. Now, get going, man!
Tommy will come down to Miami by jeep with me, Rick.
Take care of yourself.
You take care of yourself, Dad.
Rick, Godzilla may be your best weapon against this sea creature.
I don't get you, Larry.
This sea creature is our real problem, and Godzilla seems to be defending us against it. Now, don't kill Godzilla, Rick. If we can get a chance to study...
My job is to protect the people in Miami, Larry.
Oh, right, but if Godzilla does no harm, do him none.
We'll try, Larry. We'll try.
Gonna catch a wave this time, Bill. These babes are running as high as I've ever seen off Florida. I don't understand it, Shorty. There's never been a surf like this here. Must be a whale of a storm inland, but the radio never mentioned a thing this morning. Maybe something's doing in the Gulf.
Let's just get these boards out and enjoy while the surf lasts. Must be 5 footers. Hey, Bill, you see something out there?
Where? A couple 100 yards. Looks like the tip of a fin.
Ah, Shorty, don't start with that shark business. You've been watching too many movies, man.
You want to go first or what? There it is again.
Will you cut it out?
I'm getting out of here, Bill.
Come on, Bill, don't stay out there.
That Shorty, always kidding around. Wait a minute, what's going on here? No, that fin must be 100 feet high. That's a giant lizard.
Needs help. Somebody. He's out there on a surfboard. Wait. Someone, wait. He needs help.
Your friend's dead, man. He just went under a giant fin. You better get off of the beach, man.
This is Captain Wilson of the 4th Infantry. We are holding a position on the beach. All non-military personnel evacuate immediately. I say again, evacuate immediately.
Captain Wilson, how long can we hold out here?
I don't know, Captain Jennings. There's a flight of nuclear fighter jets coming in.
That's my dad. He's leading the flight pattern.
Get this boy back, Captain Jennings.
Aww.
He'll be all right with me, Captain. Besides, where would you say is a safe place?
Look, Godzilla's chasing the sea monster onto the beach.
Look at that thing. It's amphibious. A back fin 100 feet high, claws like a giant lobster. It's glowing like... Stand back, Tommy. That amphibian's radioactive.
Those things are coming right for us. Lieutenant O'Rourke, is your artillery ready?
Ready, Captain Wilson.
Fire at will, Lieutenant, and make them count.
Everyone, open fire.
Those shells aren't doing a thing. Captain Wilson, have your men concentrate on amphibian. Don't shoot at Godzilla.
At who?
Godzilla, the creature on 2 legs, Wilson. He's trying to save us from the amphibian, and he's our only hope.
Flight Hawk 1 to Flight Pattern. Our targets are below us at 2 o'clock. We'll go in one at a time before they reach the hotels on the main strip. Follow me.
Hold your fire, Lieutenant O'Rourke. Let's see what our jets can do.
Those rockets hardly phased the creatures.
Look, Captain Jennings. Godzilla's caught the amphibian.
Godzilla's trying to break amphibian's neck by twisting it around.
Wow. Get him, Godzilla. Get him. You can do it.
Captain Wilson to Commander Radley. The fighter jets are coming in for a third pass. Now I'll be in contact again in a few minutes.
Come on, Godzilla, do your stuff, boy. Artillery at the ready, Lieutenant O'Rourke.
Warheads are like raindrops to those monsters, Captain Wilson.
I'm afraid you're right, Jennings.
Come on, Godzilla, come on! Yay! Godzilla beat the amphibian! Godzilla won!
After I've gotten these photos of the amphibian, Captain Wilson, I'll need the help of your men to transport the carcass back to my base for study.
What do you think this creature is, Jennings? Where did it come from?
I'm not completely sure, Wilson, but the amphibian seems to be a mutant form of an early prehistoric amphibious creature.
Well, are there any more like him, do you think?
Let's hope not, Captain Wilson.
Flight Hawk 1 to flight pattern. Let's head for home.
But we haven't gotten that other creature, sir.
and we're not going to. He's heading out to sea again. And besides, it was Godzilla who saved our necks. Over and out. Well done, Godzilla, old boy.
Godzilla went back to sea after defeating Amphibion. Was this Amphibion the explanation of the strange occurrences in the so-called Bermuda Triangle? And what about Godzilla? Where will he go? Only time will tell.
Welcome to the Caltex Theater, a full hour of dramatic entertainment broadcast over a nationwide network of stations throughout Australia. The Caltex Theater is brought to you by Caltex Oil, marketers of over 1,000 outstanding petroleum products, in association with Caltex dealers and distributors everywhere. Tonight in the Caltex Theatre, you will hear a special adaptation of the unusual Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer motion picture, Forbidden Planet, a fascinating science fiction story set in a world of tomorrow. Starring in Forbidden Planet, you will hear Lionel Stevens, your producer, Cressick Jenkinson. The Caltex Theatre presents Forbidden Planet, Act One.
Men and women in rocket ships landed on the moon. By 2200 AD, they had reached the other planets in our solar system. Almost at once, there followed discovery of hyperdrive, through which the speed of light was attained and later greatly surpassed. So at last, mankind began the conquest and colonization of deep space. Planet's cruiser, C-57D, was more than a year out from Earth base on a special mission to the planetary system of the great main sequence star, Altair.
When do we get a DC fix, Jerry?
30 seconds, Skipper. Ship on course, sir. We'll reach DC point at 1701. That's less than 3 minutes now.
Chief, we'll drop back below light speed in about 3 minutes. Got your breakable gear stored?
Aye, aye, sir.
DC set and punched on, Skipper.
All right, attention. Captain to crew. All hands squared away to decelerate. DC stations.
Point 3896 of light speed.
Skipper, there's Altair coming up on the screen, right on the nose.
Okay, Jerry, punch out an orbit on the fourth planet.
Aye, aye, Skipper. Ship in approach, Skipper. Helical vector orientated.
Attention, captain to crew, attention. Our destination, Altair 4, is now visible on the main viewplate.
As you recollect from your briefing lectures, this is an Earth-type planet. 20 years ago, the spacecraft Bellerophon landed here with a prospecting party of scientists. Our mission is to search for survivors. That is all. Well, Doc, there it is.
The Lord certainly made some beautiful worlds.
Look at it, Cookie. What do you think about that, huh?
Not one of them new worlds. No beer, no women, no pool parlors, nothing. Nothing to do but throw rocks at tin cans. We gotta bring our own tin cans.
Attention, captain to crew. We are now entering the atmosphere of Altair 4. No survival suits will be required upon landing. Oxygen content 4.7 richer than Earth standard. Gravity only 0.897. Adjust your equipment accordingly, that's all.
All hands, check equipment.
Jerry, can you make out anything down there?
Well, maybe missing some individual structures, but as far as I can see, there are no cities, ports, roads, bridges, dams. There's just no sign of civilization at all.
Sir, we're being radar scanned.
What? Let me see that.
There it is on the electronic equipment.
Yeah, can you zero on it?
No, sir, but it seems to emanate from an area about 20 miles square.
Bosun, pass the alert.
Aye, aye, sir. Combat stations, blast the men. Activate your
spokes. Radio contact, sir. There's a voice here.
Human?
Yes, sir. Sounds like it.
Boost it on the speaker.
This ship, identify yourself. You are being tracked.
Cut me in, Quinn.
Yes, sir.
United Planets Cruiser C-57D, J.J. Adams commanding. Who are you?
Morbius of the Bellerophon.
Who?
Edward Morbius.
Jerry?
Yep, here it is. His name's on the passenger list. Morbius E., Ph.D., Lit. D., Expedition Philologist.
What do you wish here, Cruiser?
We're your relief, sir. We're very glad to find you alive. Dr. Morbius, are you there?
Naturally, I appreciate your concern. But absolutely no assistance of any kind is required.
Well, the red carpet treatment, huh?
Dr. Morbius, my orders are to survey the situation on Altair 4.
Let me repeat. I'm in no sort of difficulty here. Your best procedure will be to turn back at once, without landing.
Sorry, sir, but those aren't my orders.
Commander, if you set down on this planet, I warn you that I cannot be answerable for the safety of either your ship or your crew.
Dr. Morbius, I require landing coordinates. I'll be obliged if you'll supply me with them.
Very well. And I wash my hands of all responsibility. You have standard charts.
Yes, sir.
You may come in at 83, 17, 4 north, 148, 21 west.
Thank you. Got that, Jerry?
It's right back there in the desert.
Commander, I strongly urge you to reconsider.
Quinn, cut him off.
Please permit me to recommend...
Yeah, there's something funny going on down there, Skipper.
Well, we'll soon know what it is. Okay, Jerry, I'll take her in.
Clear, sir. No sign of any living being.
Thank you, Bosun.
Look at the color of that sky. Most fantastic greenish yellow.
Fantastic, Doc, but I'll still take blue.
Oh, I don't know. The sky, the desert, the mountains. I think a man could get used to this and grow to love it.
You better check your command, Mike, Skipper.
Yeah, good idea. Chief.
Sir.
You're in command now, Quinn, back there in the ship. You keep right at those instruments while we look around.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hey, what's this dust coming?
Dust?
A column of dust sweeping towards us over the desert.
Oh, it must be a vehicle of some sort. Yeah,
it looks like we're being met.
Bosun, lurk your men.
Aye, aye, sir.
The speed he's traveling. That driver must be a madman.
What driver?
You're right. There's a mechanical creature in charge of it.
It's coming over to us. Take it steady now.
Welcome to Altair 4, gentlemen.
It talks.
I am to transport you to the residence. If you do not speak English, I am at your disposal with 187 other languages, along with their various dialects and such ones.
No, colloquial English will do fine, thank you. This is no offense, but you are a robot, aren't you?
That is correct, sir. For your convenience, I am monitored to respond to the name Robbie.
Hmm. Well, it's a nice climate you have here, Robbie. High oxygen content.
I rarely use it myself, sir. With my metallic structure, it promotes rust.
Hey, Doc, is it a male or a female?
Cookie, I really couldn't say.
In my case, sir, the question is totally without meaning. Will you get in the vehicle, gentlemen?
Doc, Jerry, come along with me.
Right, right.
Quinn, trace this vehicle. If I blink red back to you,
I'll bring the tractor in a hurry, sir.
Right. Here you are, Skipper. Just room for you.
Passengers will please fasten their seat belts.
Looks after us like a mother. Midst of a desert, if you like. Have you ever seen a more gracious and attractive home? Exotic flowers, shady trees, pools of clear water? And there in the doorway, if I'm not mistaken, our unwilling host.
I am Morbius.
I'm Commander Adams. This is Lieutenant Farman, my executive. Lieutenant Astro, our ship's doctor.
Ironic that a simple scholar with no ambition beyond a modest measure of seclusion should, out of a clear sky, find himself besieged by an army of fellow creatures, all grimly determined to be of some service to him.
I'm sorry, sir, if we're not welcome, but we do have our orders.
Of course. And you must stay for lunch, gentlemen. Do forgive the ill manners of an old recluse, if you can. Well, gentlemen, won't you come in?
Well, whatever that lunch was, it was certainly delicious.
Simply some of Robbie's synthetics.
He's your cook, too, huh?
He even manufactures the raw materials. Now come around here, Robbie. I'll show you how he works. Now, one introduces a sample of human food through this aperture in the upper part of Robbie's body. Down here, there's a small built-in chemical laboratory where he analyzes it. Later, he can produce identical molecules in any shape or quantity.
Well, the housewife's dream.
Plus absolute selfless obedience. But do not attribute feelings to him, gentlemen. Robbie is simply a tool. Tremendously strong, of course. He could quite easily topple this whole house off its foundation.
In the wrong hands, mightn't such a tool become a deadly weapon?
No, Doctor, not even if I were the mad scientist of the thrillers. Because, you see, there happens to be a built-in safety factor. Commander, may I borrow that formidable-looking sidearm of yours? Thank you. Now, Robbie, point this thing at that fruit tree out there on the terrace. Fire! The tree has disintegrated entirely. You understand this mechanism we're in?
Yes, Morbius. A simple blaster.
All right. Now turn around here. Point it at the commander.
What?
Now, wait a minute.
Aim right between the eyes. Fire!
Fire!
You see, he's helpless. His whole electronic being is in a most distressing turmoil. He's locked in a sub-electronic dilemma between my direct orders and his basic inhibitions against harming rational beings. Order canceled. If I were to allow that distress to continue, he would blow every circuit in his body.
Dr. Morbius, how did you come by such a mechanism?
Oh, I didn't come by him, Doctor. I just tinkered him together during my first 2 months here.
What? You mean you made it?
A useful enough toy, Lieutenant. But nowadays, I have no time for such things.
Dr. Morbius, you're a philologist, an expert in words and languages, their origins and meanings. Yet this robot of yours is beyond the combined resources of all Earth's physical science.
My dear Commander, I think you overestimate both Robbie and myself. Gentlemen, let me now show you another bit of parlor magic. If I wave my hand over this beamer...
Hey, we're trapped.
Steel shutters over all the doors and windows.
Now, forgive me, gentlemen, I did not mean to alarm you. I had Robbie install those steel shutters before I realized how altogether safe I am here. I just have to pass my hand over the beamer again, and they return to their original position out of sight.
Oh, that's better.
Well, gentlemen, this has been very pleasant. You've seen how very comfortable I am here. No hardships, no special difficulties, and no need at all for military assistance. I dare say you've become impatient to get back to base.
Yes, sir, the moment we've interviewed the other members of the Bellerophon party.
The others? But there are no others, Commander.
The what?
Before the first year was out, they'd all, every man and woman, succumbed to a... Well, and a sort of planetary force here. Some dark, terrible, incomprehensible force. Only my wife and myself were immune.
And how do you account for your immunity, Dr. Morbius?
Well, my wife and I differed from the others in our special love of this new world, in our boundless longing to make a home here, far from the scurry and the strife of mankind. I remember how, when the boat was taken to return to Earth, she and I were utterly heartbroken.
Skipper, there's no record of any wife on the list of the Bellerophon passengers.
Lieutenant, look under biochemistry, Julia Marson. She and I were married with a skipper on the voyage out here.
I thought Robbie had made some very charming feminine touches. I take it Mrs. Morbius isn't at home today.
My dear wife died a few months after the others. And in her case, it was of natural causes.
Oh, I'm very sorry. Dr. Morbius... Just what were the symptoms of all those other deaths? The unnatural ones, I mean.
The symptoms were very striking, Commander. One by one, in spite of every possible safeguard, my co-workers were torn literally limb from limb.
By what?
By some devilish thing that never once showed itself.
And the Bellerophon?
Vaporized, as the three remaining survivors tried to take her off.
And yet in all these 19 years, you personally have... Never again been bothered by this planetary force?
Only in nightmares of those times. Yet always in my mind, I seem to feel the creature is lurking somewhere close at hand. Sly and irresistible. Only waiting to be re-invoked for murder.
Father?
Halter! Halter, I specifically asked you not to join us for lunch.
Oh, but Father, lunch is over. I'm sure you never said a word about not coming in for coffee. Well, did you or did you not?
A girl... A brother, is she terrific?
Take it easy now, Farman.
Gentlemen, this is my daughter, Commander Adams, Dr. Ostro.
Editor.
Lieutenant Farman.
Oh, how do you do?
How do you do?
Oh, I've always so terribly wanted to meet a young man, and now, three of them at once.
That's very kind of you.
Oh, you're lovely, Doctor. Of course, the other two are unbelievable.
Well, that puts me in my place.
Could this one get you some coffee?
Oh, I'm quite able to get it.
Oh, of course you are, but come over here.
Well, Commander, if I can be of any help to you in your preparations for the homeward voyage...
Thank you, sir, but unfortunately, circumstances may keep us here for quite a while.
Oh, circumstances?
My orders don't quite seem to cover the Bellerophon fatalities. I'm forced now to contact base for new instructions.
But, Commander, suppose these new instructions require my return to Earth for questioning. 2 years or more away from my work here? No. You know, tell me, just what is involved in your making contact with Earth base?
Well, fundamentally, it's a question of crude power, how to short-circuit the continuum on a 5 or 6 parsec level. Of course, a transmitter of that sort isn't exactly standard equipment.
No.
To build one, we'd have to make use of about 2/3 of the ship's electronic gear, then unship the main drive to Joseph. Just to construct a bunker to house the core would take us about 10 days.
Disabled here for 10 days and 10 nights? Tell me, would 2-inch lead shielding do just as well?
Sure, it'd be fine. If we happen to be carrying about 100 square yards of the stuff.
I'll have Robbie run some off for you. We'll have it not later than noon tomorrow.
Well, that's very obliging of you, sir.
Obliging? Look out there, Commander. The graves of the Bellerophon party. I dug those graves with my own hands. Believe me, I have no wish to repeat that experience.
Put it over there by the core, thank you, Robbie.
Wait a minute. That's solid lead he's carrying.
Common lead would have crushed the vehicle, sir. This is my morning's run of isotope 217. The whole thing hardly comes to 10 tons. Pardon me, sir.
Oh, hello, Alter.
Hello, Lieutenant.
Does your father know you're out here?
He did tell me not to go near the ship, but this isn't very near, is it?
You'd be farther away still if we took a walk.
Robbie might come back.
Oh, he's occupied over there. Cookie's following him around like a shadow. Now, come on, a walk's just what you need on a morning like this. Hey, Robbie.
Can I be of service, sir?
Oh, never mind about the sir. Come over here where the skipper can't see us. Look, I'm nothing by a cook, so you don't have to be that polite. But I'm a stranger on this so-called planet, and I was just wondering if, if you could tell me where I could get hold of some of the real stuff.
Real stuff?
Just for cooking purposes, you understand. I take a big pride in my duties.
Pardon me, sir. Stuff?
Oh, just about one jaw left in this bottle. Now, this is it. Genuine Asian rocket bourbon. Hey, wait a minute. Hey, I didn't say you could drink it. Why, you low-living contraption, I ought to take a can opener to you.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing. Yes. Relatively simple alcoholic molecules with traces of fusel oil. Would 60 gallons be sufficient?
Gallons? Hey, Robbie, I've been from here to there in this galaxy, and I just want you to know, you're the most understanding soul I ever met up with.
Tomorrow night, sir, it will be ready. Now, if you will pardon me, Miss Alter will be waiting.
It's nothing personal, Alter. Just a kiss.
Oh, but, Lieutenant, why should people want to kiss each other? Oh,
well, it's an old custom. All the really high civilizations go in for it.
Oh, but it's so silly.
Well, it's good for you, though. It stimulates the whole system. As a matter of fact, you can't be in tip-top health without it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'd only be too happy to show you.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Lieutenant.
Oh, it's no trouble at all.
Is that all there is to it, this kissing?
Well, you've sort of got to stick with it.
Oh, could we try just once more? Do you mind?
Oh, not at all.
I don't know, Lieutenant. There must be something seriously the matter with me because, well, honestly, I haven't noticed the least bit of stimulation.
Honey, let's do this thing right. This time, let's really give it the works, huh? All right, honey, now just let yourself go and...
Lieutenant Barr!
Don't say another word, sir. I know there are a lot of pressing duties waiting for me back at the ship.
You're right, Lieutenant.
And rank does have its little privileges, doesn't it, sir?
You can depend on it, Lieutenant, that those privileges won't be stretched into taking your kind of advantages.
What I...
Dismissed!
Yes, sir.
Well, what's the matter? Why did you both act so funny?
Well, don't you understand, Alva? No? Well, look at yourself. You can't run around like that in front of men. It was bad enough anyway, a girl like you, after a year in a spaceship, but when you're wearing nothing but that play suit, particularly in front of a space wolf like Farman, well,
For Pete's sake, go home and put on something that's... Well, put on anything.
What's wrong with my clothes? I designed them myself. Oh, don't you like the way I look? Stop looking at me that way.
Alta, get out of here before I have you run out of the area under guard. Then I'll have to put more guards on the guards. Now get out of here, Alta.
Funny feeling, Joe. I stood guard over the spaceship before at night. It never were two moons in the sky.
Yeah.
Joe.
Yeah?
Do you hear something?
Like what?
Like a sort of big breathing.
No.
Well, that's funny. I did.
No one around. You can see that. No sign of anyone or anything.
Funny. Like a sort of big breathing.
All right. Both guards claim to have been at their posts and away. Yet the ship was entered. The heavy-duty hatch was raised and the latch back. Equipment was sabotaged. All this without anybody seeing or hearing anything.
Same story from everyone, Skipper.
Quinn, I don't care how you do it, but this gear has got to be patched up. Otherwise, we'll never get the transmitter working to contact Earth Base. And we'll never be able to take the ship home again when the time comes.
Yeah.
No one actually saw or hurt anyone last night. Strong says...
Yeah, I know. He thinks he heard something like... Like a big breathing.
And so the curtain falls on Act One of tonight's Caltech play, Forbidden Planet. In a moment, we commence Act Two. The Caltech Theater now presents Lionel Stevens in Forbidden Planet. Act Two.
Well, you like my new dress, Commander?
Well, I...
It's long, you see. Nothing shows through.
Alta, I'm sorry about the way I spoke to you yesterday. I was, well, sort of bothered.
I have this dress made especially for you. Though I didn't really want to see you. You still look at me in that funny way. I suppose there's just something personally about me that you don't like.
Alta, you always look quite beautiful.
Well, then why don't you kiss me like everybody else does?
Everybody? Hasn't your father taught you anything at all?
Well, he says I'm terribly ignorant. But I've had poetry and mathematics and logic, physics and geology and
biology? Well, of course, that's mainly on the theoretical side.
Oh, well, so far. But what's wrong with theory?
This is what's wrong with it.
That wasn't at all as I felt after the lieutenant kissed me. I feel different altogether. A wonderful, wonderful feeling.
Thanks. Go back to the house. I have to see your father. This is the situation, Dr. Morbius. Last night, the ship was entered and our Klystron monitor was sabotaged.
And you suspect me? Then the time has come for clarification. Sit down, gentlemen. In times long past, this planet was the home of a mighty and noble race of beings who call themselves the Krell. Ethically as well as technologically, they were a whole million years ahead of mankind. But in unlocking the mysteries of nature, they conquered even their baser selves. In the course of aeons, they abolished sickness, insanity, crime, and all injustice. But then, seemingly upon the threshold of some supreme accomplishment, which was to have crowned their entire history, this all but divine race perished in a single night.
Perished?
Yes, Doctor. In the 2,000 centuries since that unexplained catastrophe, even their cloud-piercing towers of glass and porcelain and adamantine steel have crumbled back into the soil of Altair 4, and nothing, absolutely nothing, remains above the ground. However, under the ground...
Under the ground, Dr. Morbius?
Behind this room there is a tunnel. Now come with me, and I will show you wonders of which the human mind could never conceive. Well, gentlemen, already you've seen a certain amount. You've seen Krell metal, with molecules so densely interlocked that your blasters make no kind of impact on it. You've seen mile upon mile of self-servicing, self-renewing machinery, still functioning as perfectly as when it was constructed, more than 2,000 centuries ago.
Utterly incredible.
You've seen their laboratories.
What's this, Dr. Morbius?
On this screen may be projected the total scientific knowledge of the Krell, from its primitive beginnings to the day of its annihilation. A sheer bulk, surpassing many million earthly libraries. I turn this knob, and as you see, the panel lights up. Hieroglyphics appear.
You're able to read this?
A little. It's my profession. I started on it some 20 years ago. Eventually, I was able to deduce most of their huge logical alphabet, so I began to learn. And the first practical result was that robot of mine, which you gentlemen appear to find so very remarkable. Child's play. Why, I've come here every day now for 2 decades, painfully picking up a few of the least difficult fragments of their knowledge.
A thing like this, it's too big to evaluate.
Dr. Morbius, what's this device?
Oh, one could describe that as a brain booster. And as a headset, electrodes at each end. You can see it was designed for something far bulkier than my human cranium.
And its function?
I'll activate it. Now, watch closely.
A figure's appearing. It's Alter.
Just a three-dimensional image, Commander.
But it's alive.
Because my daughter is alive in my brain from microsecond to microsecond whilst I manipulate. There. I remove the electrodes from my temples, and the image vanishes. It's something of a strain.
Here, let me try. I put the headset on, I pull the switch. Now, is that right?
Stop.
But I want to...
Commander, you'll never survive. Our Bellerophon skipper tried it. It was instantly fatal to him.
Oh, so you're immune to this too, Dr. Morbius.
In my first attempt at creating a brain image here, the shock rendered me unconscious for a whole day and a whole night.
Yet you came back for a second go at it?
It was a matter of science, Doctor. You can imagine my joy when I discovered that the shock had permanently doubled my intellectual capacity. Otherwise, my researches would have come to nothing, poor as they may have been.
So that's how it happened.
I have a great deal more to show you, gentlemen. Can you spare further time away from your ship?
Yes, I believe so. I've left Lieutenant Farnham in charge. I've ordered him to set up a standard perimeter for the full cable.
All right. All hands stand clear of the magnetic fence area.
Yeah. Have you tested it yet, Bosun?
Just about to do so, sir.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, toss the branch at it.
There you go, the spark, sir.
Fine. That'll keep any unwanted visitor from entering the camp. See the full-scale alerts maintained, Bosun.
Aye, aye, sir.
A lieutenant.
Huh? Oh, what's your trouble, Cookie?
Well, I haven't completed my washing up duties after chow. I request the lieutenant's permission to take a little walk outside the perimeter, sir.
But there's nothing out there.
Well, sir, I thought it might brighten up the boys' mess a little bit if I could, find a few wild radishes or something.
Look, Cookie, I don't know what you're lying about, but, you better get back here before the skipper checks in, or we'll both get skinned.
Yes, sir.
Quinn, this is Farman. Kill the power on the fence. All right, Cookie, off you go.
Yes, sir. I thank you, sir.
All right, Quinn. Put it back on.
Robbie, I ain't never gonna forget this. Bottled stacks of them.
480 pints, sir, as you requested. Total 60 gallons.
Oh, I gotta try it. Wait a minute, Robbie. genuine Kansas City bourbon. Smooth, too. Like I said, Robbie, anything I can do. Anytime you're hard up for a couple of gallons of loop oil, you just let me know, huh? Hey, what's up? You see something? Somebody coming this way?
No, sir. Nothing coming this way.
Hey, Lieutenant! Lieutenant, the fence is showing! Lieutenant!
Sure. But there's no one coming through.
Shall I have the current shut down, sir?
No. No, it stopped now. Strange, that. Just shorting out.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, check over the whole system first thing in the morning, boss.
Aye, sir.
Hey, bosun, that fence, the way it was shorting.
Yes, sir.
Commander, you're too arbitrary. Perhaps I do not choose to be dictated to in my own world.
But Dr. Morbius, a scientific find of this magnitude has got to be taken under United Planets supervision. No one man can be allowed to monopolize it.
In the past 2 hours, I've been expecting you to make exactly such an asinine statement.
Asinine?
Just one moment, Commander. For close on 20 years now, I've been constantly, and I hope dispassionately, considering this very problem. Now I've come to the unalterable conclusion that man is unfit as yet to receive such knowledge, such almost limitless power.
Whereas Morbius, with his artificially expanded intellect, is now ideally suited to administer this power for the whole human race.
Precisely, Doctor. Such portions of the Krell science, as I may from time to time deem suitable and safe, I shall dispense to Earth. Other portions I shall withhold. In this, I shall be answerable exclusively to my own conscience and judgment.
Dr. Morbius, in the absence of special instructions, you leave me in a very awkward position. I wanted to contact you from the ship. Adam speaking.
Commander, this is Farman.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Skipper, the chief's been murdered.
Quinn murdered? What?
He was alone on the ship working on the monitor. The rest of us were all outside on guard duty.
But how was it done?
Done? Skipper, his body's plastered all over the communications room.
Right. Leave everything as it is. We're on our way. Come on, Doc.
It started again.
Doc, that's the foot of whatever it was that killed Quinn last night.
I made this plaster model from the footprints we found. 37 inches by 19. And the terrifying thing, Skipper, this thing runs counter to every known law of evolution. It just doesn't fit into normal nature. Anywhere in this galaxy, it's a nightmare.
Commander, are you ready to hold discipline on the cook?
Yes, let's have him.
Come on, Cookie.
Yes, sir.
I'm obliged to remind you, sir, that I gave him permission to go out last night.
Did you give him permission to get falling down drunk, Lieutenant?
Drunk, sir? Me, sir? Well, anyway, why did that robot argue me in a drink and all that whiskey in the first place?
You were with the robot last night?
Oh, yes, sir. Him and me, we kind of got to toasting each other's good health. Just for your cordial interplanetary relations, you understand?
And that went on all the time, even while the chief was being killed?
Well, certainly, sir. But you don't think I could have got that stiff in 5 minutes?
All right, dismissed.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, come on, Cookie.
Well, Doc, it just about washes the robot up as a suspect.
And what does that leave us with?
Maybe it leaves us with the same one we've always had.
Morbius.
But we were with him.
Maybe you and I ought to drop over to the Krell laboratory and get our brains boosted. Then maybe we could understand.
Sir?
Yes, Lieutenant?
Dr. Morbius is here.
Oh. Well, ask Dr. Morbius to come in.
Yes, sir.
Skipper, what do you suppose he's...
Oh, good day, Dr. Morbius.
Well, Commander, I dare say neither of us really slept last night.
That's a pretty close guess.
I warned you while your ship was still in space. I bade you not to land on the planet. Believe me, Commander, that's only a foretaste.
The Bellerophon pattern is being woven all over again.
What?
Remain here, and the next attack upon your party will be more general and more deadly.
Dr. Morbius, how do you know that?
No? Well, I seem to visualize it. If you wish, call it a premonition. That is all I have to say, Commander.
Well, Skipper, what do you make of that?
I'd say it sounded like an ultimatum. We'll be ready. Tonight we'll be prepared for an attack. Now, Bosun, I want a clear field of fire in all directions.
You've got it, sir.
Fine, fine. Lieutenant.
Sir.
You got your trouble squad in hand?
Yes, sir, they're in hand. But they're a little trigger happy. They're sort of edgy to see whatever's out there tonight.
Yeah. Jerry, look, this might be a big deal coming up.
Could be the biggest, Skip.
Well, I want you to know that I'm sorry if I kind of leaned on you. You've got to understand that.
Stop knocking yourself out, Skip. She picked the right man.
Huh? Oh.
Skipper. Radar just picked up something.
Where away?
At the head of the gully, heading this way.
Automatic control. Batteries. Fire. Hold fire.
Dead on target, Skipper, but it's still coming.
I'll stop it.
Get back, Lieutenant. Batteries, fire. Batteries, cease fire.
Skipper, it's still coming.
Well, whatever it was, our main battery finally stopped it.
You believe that, Skipper?
No. No, it just went away for some reason. It'll be back. Doc, an invisible being that can't be disintegrated by atomic fission.
No, Skipper, that's a scientific impossibility.
Hypnotic illusions don't tear people apart, and that's what this thing did to our men tonight. Doc, you saw its shape yourself standing right there in those neutron beams.
It must have been made of solid nuclear material, renewing its molecular structure from one microsecond to the next.
Bosun, I want the tractor.
Ready, sir.
So now we just pick up the girl and her father, whether they like it or not, do we?
Section 86A, evacuate all civilians from disaster area.
Yeah? You left out two very important words. Where feasible. Now, if you're a member of the Bellerophon expedition, their ship was vaporized trying to lift off.
Which makes it a gilt-edged priority that one of us gets into that Krell lab and takes that brain boost. Well, I don't know of any other way we can hope to combat this thing.
You remember what happened when the Bellerophon's commander took that brain boost?
Yes, I remember that, too. Doc, in case we make it into the lab, I'll take first go at the booster. You hear me, Doc?
I hear you, Skip.
Bosun?
Aye, sir.
Leaving you in command while we visit Dr. Morbius. Get the ship operational. Do your best to wait it out for me and the doctor, but the second that fence starts to short again, you lift off.
Right, Skipper.
Let's go, Doc.
Alza. Oh, I'm so glad to see you. So glad. I've had the most awful dream that you...
I'm all right, Alza.
Why are you here? Tell me what's happened.
We were attacked. Three men died, including Jerry Farman.
Oh, darling.
That's why I came here. Before anything else happens, I have to see to your safety.
How were you attacked? By what?
I don't know. It's nothing human, just some kind of big outline on the disintegrator beams. Alza, you can't explain it.
No.
Anyway, we fought it, and we lost, and I believe it'll come back.
Well, then you must leave now.
Darling, I'm not going without you.
I can't possibly leave Father alone. I just can't.
Then we'll take him with us.
By force? I can't agree to that either.
Also, you don't realize what's loose on this planet.
But I'm immune, like both my parents.
That's what your father says, but I don't believe it. Nothing could be immune to that thing up there.
Oh, darling, darling, please go. Please, if you love me, go.
Darling, listen to me.
Oh, go, darling.
Doc, can you talk some sense into this? Hey, Doc. Well, where is he? The doc was right here.
Here is the doctor, sir.
Lay him on the sofa, Robbie.
Door's open into the tunnel.
That's where Robbie brought him from.
Doc, you took the brain boost? You ought to see my new mind. Up there in lights, on the indicator. Bigger than Morbius now.
Easy, Doc, easy. Easy.
Listen, Morbius was too close to the problem. The Krell... The Krell had completed their final project. True creation. Creation of life.
Come on, Doc, let's have it.
But... The Krell forgot one thing.
Yes, what?
Monsters. Monsters from the Id.
The Id? What's that? Well, talk, Doc. Doc.
Oh, darling.
How romantic.
Father.
A fool, a middling idiot. As though his ape's brain could contain the secrets of the Krell.
Father, he's dead.
He was warned, and now he's paid. Let him be bedded along with the other victims of greed and folly.
Morbius, you've chosen for me. John, I'm ready to go with you.
Hold her. No. Mother, she mustn't do this. She must be prevented.
Morbius, what is the Id?
Young man, my daughter is planning a very foolish action. She will be terribly punished.
What is the Id?
Id. It's an obsolete term, once used to describe the elementary basis of the subconscious mind.
Monsters from the Id, the subconscious mind.
What?
Monsters from the subconscious. That's what the Doc meant. Morbius, those machines in there, 8,000 cubic miles of Klystron relays, enough power for a whole population of creative geniuses, operated by remote control, operated by the electromagnetic impulses of individual Krell brains.
And for what purpose?
In return, that machine would instantaneously project solid matter to any point on the planet, in any shape or color they might imagine. For any purpose, Morbius. Creation by mere thought.
Why haven't I seen this all along?
But like you, the Krell forgot one deadly danger. Their own subconscious hate and lust for destruction.
The beast. The mindless primitive. Even the Krell must have evolved from that beginning.
So those mindless beasts of the subconscious had access to a machine that could never be shut down. The secret devil of every soul on the planet, all set free at once to loot and maim and take revenge, Morbius, and kill.
My poor Krell. After a million years of shining sanity, they could hardly have understood what power was destroying them. But the one obvious fallacy. The last Krell died some 2,000 centuries ago. But today, as we all know, there's still at large upon this planet a living monster. A monster created by the subconscious mind of someone.
Your mind refuses to face the conclusion.
Morbius.
What?
Something approaching from the southwest, breaking down trees in its path. Quite close.
Father!
The monster. That thing out there, well, it's you. It was your subconscious that created it.
You're insane! You must be! How else would you have led it here, where Alta must see it torn to pieces?
You still think she's immune? She's joined herself to me, body and soul.
Yes, and whatever comes, forever!
Say it's a lie! Shout! Let it hear you out there! Say you don't love this man!
Not even if I could!
Stop it, Robbie! Don't let it in! Kill it, Robbie!
He can do nothing, Morbius. He knows it's your other self.
Heavens, I'm not a monster!
We're all part monsters in our subconscious. That's why we have laws and religion.
Into the tunnel, quickly!
Morbius, you listen to me. We don't have much time. Your mind was artificially enlarged. Consciously, it still lacked the power to operate the great machines. But your subconscious had been made strong enough.
I won't hear you.
20 years ago, when your comrades voted to return to Earth, you sent your secret Id out to murder them. Not quite realizing it, of course, except maybe in your dreams.
What man can remember his own dreams?
Well, at least when our ship was approaching from space, you remembered enough to warn us off. But then, when you thought you were threatening your little egomaniac empire, your subconscious sent its Id monster out again. More deaths, Morbius. More murder. Even in you, the loving father, there still exists this mindless primitive. More enraged and more inflamed with each new frustration.
So now you're whistling up your monster again to punish her for disloyalty and disobedience. And if you don't do something about it soon, Morbius, it's going to be coming right through that door.
Shut it, Phil Middle. Impossible.
The machines are going to supply your monster with whatever amount of power requires.
Outrageous. How to say you don't believe this, Omni? Tell me you don't. Then it must be true. I must be guilty. My evil self is at that door. And I have no power to stop it.
Father, you can help us. I've known you. Great and noble like the Krell.
Yes. Yes, I can help you. I can.
You! Up there! No further! I deny you! I give you up! I deny you!
It is finished. All finished.
Father.
Strain, it's been too much.
Commander, throw that switch.
This?
Yes, throw it. In 24 hours, you and Alta must be 100 million miles away out in space. The Krell furnaces. A chain reaction has begun. Can't be reversed. Go. Go quickly.
.6 miles. We're clear now, Alta.
That's Altair 4 on the viewplate.
Yes, the bright speck below the star. 15 seconds, it'll all be over. Altair 4 would be destroyed. Your father, my shipmates, all the stored knowledge of the Krell. 5 seconds, 4, 3, 2, 1. There. The explosion.
Oh, Father.
Altair. About 1 million years from now, the human race will have crawled up to where the Krell stood in their great moment of triumph and tragedy. Your father's name will shine again like a beacon in the galaxy. It'll remind us that we are, after all, not God.
So ends our Caltex play, Forbidden Planet. In a moment, we will give you tonight's cast and tell you about next week's presentation in the Caltex Theater. Ladies and gentlemen, the producer of tonight's Caltex play, Cressick Jenkinson. Thank you. Forbidden Planet was presented tonight by courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Proprietary Limited. The script was adapted for radio by Richard Lane, and the special sound effects were devised and recorded for this production by Graham Moncrief. In the starring role, you heard...
I played Dr. Morbius.
This was Lionel Stevens. The supporting cast was as follows. Robbie the Robot, Edward Heppel. Dr. Ostro, Leonard Teal. Lieutenant Farman, Richard Meikle. Quinn, Stuart Finch. The Cook, John Llewellyn. The Bosun, Al Garcia. And as Alta and Commander Adams, you heard Joan Lander and Hart McGuire. Thank you, Mr. Jenkinson. Oil.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwick from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com Radio.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian Serafic-Panopoli and Stevie Farnaby.